kid, the drama kid died. Let the drama kid, let the drama kid die. Let the drama kid, let the drama kid die. Let the drama kid, let the drama kid die. Let the drama kid, let the drama kid die. Let the drama kid, let the drama kid die. Let the drama kid, let the drama kid die.
Yo, it's the Big Three Roll Up. It's your boy Silk.
It's Kev.
And Newberg.
What's going on, baby? It's count week. Everybody got their official count going on. I got Friday Night Lights. Bert.
Man, I'm up here in Tallahassee doing the podcast once again from my hotel room. Camp starts on Wednesday up here for Florida State. They go Wednesday, they go Thursday, and they go Friday, and then I'm done with camp season for the rest for the end of summer.
When did you start camp season?
Really? Camp season starts.
Tell the truth. When did you start? I know you had
been vacationing.
I know you had Nia and Sinone and them out there. When did you start camp season? This is your first day?
Sheesh. Y'all boys just coming at my neck early, man. I'm gonna have Trident fill in for me every week. My camp season started in February when I was at the Nike camp in Orlando. So my first camp was in Orlando, and then I was in Miami. And then I had a couple 7-on-7s all over the state. Florida State's first camp was in mid-June. Then we had the IMG National Championships the following weekend. And now I'm back here in Tallahassee for the
You had one job the whole camp season, to get a Team Tampa kid to Florida State, and you didn't deliver.
Drop the ball.
Man, you know, I think I'd been running Team Tampa for like 5 years before a first time a kid from Team Tampa signed with FSU. And that was the year that they got two. They got George Campbell and Auden Tate. But you got to remember, prior to that, Vernon Hargraves, Dante Fowler.
How good is Auden Tate? How good is Nooney Murray? Like, how good are those guys?
Well, man? I said it from the start, man. I said this back when they were in high school. I said George Campbell might have a better highlight at Florida State. He might make some unbelievable catches. But I said this, I said Auden Tate will be a more productive player than George Campbell on the college level. And so far, Auden Tate has had more highlights. He's had more production. Now, granted, George Campbell's been hurt. He had some kind of sports hernia last season that kept him out. But he's back. He'll put up some numbers. But I still expect Auden Tate to have a bigger career than George Campbell.
Do you think they can break the Dossie curse?
I mean, hey, in my opinion, I don't think it's a curse on Dossie. I think wide receiver coaching, you're only as good as the room of wide receivers you got.
Yeah, but Kenny Shaw's good, right?
Kenny Shaw's a good receiver. He's a good receiver. FSU has recruited a lot of good receivers. They haven't recruited a lot of great receivers.
What's going on, Ray? I mean, five-star, you guys rating, right, Bird?
Hey, let's see. Let me tell you this. Is Jay Graham, Florida State's running back coach, does he get credit for Dalvin Cook? Hell no. Running back and wide receiver, you're only as good as the room of guys that
you
got.
Yeah, but if five-star Dalvin Cook busted, we talk about it.
But he was a great player in high school.
Yeah, but we talk about Larry Coker. Like, he's the worst coach that ever win a championship. Gene Chizik. But we don't talk about their success. We just talk about what they did wrong, even though they won titles as head coaches, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but
so you just called Dossie's a Gene Chizik of wide receivers coach.
That's fine, but if Dossie landed great wide receivers, he'd get great wide receiver play. He's landed good wide receivers. He's gotten good wide receiver play.
So you're saying Florida State need to evaluate better?
No, I think they need to recruit better. It's not like they're not offering Henry Ruggs. It's not like they didn't offer Calvin Ridley. It's not like they didn't offer, you know.
But they got Devontae Phillips. They got Ermine Lane. They got those five-star guys.
That's because, let's see. Ermine was a five-star. I don't think there's been any others.
Devontae Phillips
George Campbell was what?
I don't think Devontae Phillips. I don't think George ended up as a five star. He certainly
George Campbell definitely was a five star.
At one point, he didn't end up a five star.
Yeah, but he ended up a high four star. I mean, come on.
That's a good one. They haven't recruited great wide receivers.
All right, so if Gavin ends up a tight end, then we can blame Dawson. Like, can we blame Dawson?
I take that back. George Campbell was a five-star in the composite, but a four-star by 24/7 Sports.
All right, so, yeah, but, okay, Lorenzo, you know, Pope is going to end up a five-star on 247, but he won't end up a composite five-star because fucking ESPN's got him at 280. So what matters? The composite, right? That's what we count? Like, when we make bets, we do bet on the composite.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm not. But George Campbell is a receiver that had issues catching the football in high school. You got one job.
You gave him five stars, bro. Not us.
No, listen. No, 24/7 Sports gave him five stars despite me. The weirdest thing was this: they wanted to rank George Campbell as the number one wide receiver in the country at one point, and he's on my 7-on-7 team, and I wouldn't vouch for him to be the number one wide receiver in the country. Like I said, I always was high on George, but I felt if you're not going to be great at catching the football at wide receiver, that's an issue. And that's something that, you know, he just didn't do real naturally. It's something that you can learn to get better at. But coming out of high school, I disagreed with his ranking. It was really strange. Like, why would they not listen to me more when he's on my 7-on-7 team? And I've seen George Campbell in person more than anybody else in the country. Yet I wouldn't jump up on the table for him to be the number one wide receiver in the country, but they still wanted to because of all his athletic ability. So I disagreed with that, actually.
Gotcha.
Hey, let me ask you something real quick, just because I saw it on the timeline earlier. Would you say right now that Derwin James is a better college player than Matt Elam? Right now. You got film on him for – he's played 2 years. You got film on him for 13 games. Do you think he's a better – college player than Matt Elam?
No, but I think
his potential's there. Like, if he's a third board finalist,
I think the timeline mistakes when people come out and name Derwin James the best safety in America. Right, absolutely.
Saw potential.
Yeah, what else could it be on?
Well, no, but when they specifically say players. No, when they specifically call it a player that's established, though. That's when I have an issue. You know, like when they say he's better than Sean Taylor, and he's better.
Yeah, they're not saying.
Even Greg Reed. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, even like.
They're not saying.
But I think here's why I think people are saying that. Let's say Derwin James gets a concussion in game four and for whatever reason doesn't even play again the rest of the season. Derwin James is probably still going to be a first or second round draft pick.
He'll be a first round draft pick. I'm not arguing.
Right. Even if he only plays four games a season, he's still going to probably be a first round draft pick. So. That's why people are saying this. That's why you have people coming out on, you know, professionals, I mean, coming out and naming him in stories as the number one player. It's all based on potential.
Well, and I'm a professional.
Like Campbell's shit with 247 is all on potential.
Kev, you got a crystal ball. That don't make you a professional.
That shit has to pan out, bro.
No one really has better critiques than me, though. That's the thing. Like,
you do have elite critiques.
Yeah, I missed on Kaya, but... I mean, shit, that shit happened. Motherfucker, everybody missed on Kaya. Everybody thought
we still remember that, though. Top five.
Everyone thought he was the number two pick. I get it because I tweeted about the most, but a lot of people thought he was the number two pick. Motherfucker, I stand in the paint, though. I ain't deleting none of them tweets.
Yeah, speaking about standing in the paint, something happened today on Twitter where there was an account with 12 followers reported some big news. Kev, you want to talk about this Temple home and home with Miami? So recap it. So what happened on Twitter was a guy with 12 posts with 12 followers tweets that he has some breaking news that Miami is scheduled a home and home with Temple. You and the whole Kane gang.
Me and Dro. Just say that shit. Just me and Dro. Like,
you and the whole Kane gang are like, what are y'all talking about? This guy has 12 followers. Fuck you.
Hey, at first, I believed it.
And then it was real.
It's not official. We don't know if it's real. But here's the thing. Spin it, bro. No, I can't spin it. I don't understand how... I don't understand how you schedule home and homes with like Arkansas State and Appalachian State and fucking Toledo, and then you schedule home and homes with Michigan State. Okay, then Al Golden gets fired, and then you schedule home and homes with Michigan State and Texas A&M, and then you have neutral site games with LSU, Florida, and Alabama potentially in 2020, and then you just hustle backwards and fucking schedule a home and home with Temple. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I get it, bro. I get it.
Yeah, right. I know you says it doesn't make sense, but what do you think the thinking is from the Miami side?
Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, I have no idea. We used to play them in the Big East. Maybe that's what the fuck. Maybe we're trying to get some nostalgia, some Temple Miami nostalgia. Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
Maybe
like,
they think Al Golden's still there or something.
It's Jeff Collins, right? Like, it's Jeff Collins.
Yeah, it's Jeff
Florida.
But maybe they didn't realize. Maybe they thought it was still Al Golden. They were trying to get some payback.
Yeah, they thought it was still – they thought that they hired Al Golden, but he was also still working for Temple. Yes, that is exactly right. You got it, Berg.
All right. Well, guys, since we're going to talk about this Temple matchup. Hold on.
Just finished up an AAC home and home this year?
Since this is a premier matchup.
No, did they? Yes or no?
Well, right now –
Did they? Yes or no? Did they just finish up an AAC home and home with
Berg.
Fucking USF? Did they? Yes or no?
Speaking of,
yes or no? Did they just?
Yeah, but that's an in-state rivalry. That's a budding rivalry.
USF and FSU are an in-state budding rivalry.
They went up to Tallahassee and kicked their ass in 2009. Florida State owed it.
Who was the quarterback?
BJ Daniels. But BJ listen, Daniels. Florida State owed it to him because. Hey,
well, we owe it to Temple. Then we owe the fucking Temple.
The USF did for – because USF beat Florida State, they went on to win a national championship because it got Bobby Bowden the fuck up out of there.
Y'all need some weed, bro.
That's how I know that when the first time we had Berg on the podcast, when he was just a guest, and we asked him the Jimbo Bobby shit, and he thought for so long, he still resents Bobby. So just say it.
All right, well, listen, since we're talking Miami Temple in this premier matchup, I figured I'd bring in one of the best AAC insiders in the industry, Tito Banach. Tito, you there?
Tito, what's going on, baby?
Yeah.
Tito, yeah, the AAC insider. Nobody knows the American Conference better than this man. And since we got this big Miami matchup looming, Tito, I wanted to bring you on to kind of break it down. What about Miami and Temple? How do you see this thing playing out?
I don't think I don't really understand the matchup, quite frankly. I think it's pretty weird, but I mean, I think Temple has a good defense. That's the best thing I can say about them.
Take your Miami Homer hat off for a second and put your AAC insider.
My AAC hat is on.
I can just feel Temple's the pain in your Miami Hurricane heart that this is hurting you, Tito. So take off the AAC hat. Stop. Forget about it. Let's just talk about it from a Miami fan perspective. How do you feel about this?
I mean, it is a dumb matchup. I don't see why Miami would waste their time with an AAC team. They could assign like a Big 12 team or like maybe even a Pac-12 team just to like be crazy about it. But
are you gonna get flown?
Team, a group of five team doesn't really make sense to me.
Tito, if you're going to get flown out, you got to win one of these motherfuckers. You know what I'm saying? So they got to get a winnable game that they get flown out to, man. I get it.
No, Tito.
I mean, it is relatively easy.
So, Tito, Jeff Collins? Is this a Temple team on the rise that Miami just kind of jumped ahead of and scheduled?
They won the conference last year. And they have an impressive running back, but he's going to be graduating soon. I know they've got a couple.
Tito, stop breaking up fucking Temple, man. Tito, stop breaking up fucking Temple, bro. They're fucking trolling you. Hey,
look, my checks come, so I need to get my checks.
Hey, no, Tito, Berg was going to send your personal check.
Berg, I thought it was Pete for a second, talking that money.
Yeah, man, hey. These things keep bouncing. I don't know what's going on.
Stop it. Tito's well taken care of.
So, Tito, how do you schedule a home-and-home with Michigan State, a home-and-home with Texas A&M, neutral site games with Florida, LSU? You're just finishing up a home-and-home with Notre Dame, a possible home-and-home in 2020 with Alabama. and fucking do a home and home with Temple. Like, that's hustling backwards, right?
Yeah, like, it doesn't make sense. I don't get why they would do that. Like, I was telling Josh this earlier. They could have picked literally any other team in any of the Power 5 major conferences, whether it had been SEC, ACC, could have been, like, even a team out in the Pac-12, Big 12. You could have done something with, like, West Virginia, like an old throwback rivalry.
West Virginia pulled out of a home and home a couple of years ago. That's why they ended up with the Tulane home and home. But like, why not Baylor or Texas Tech or?
I said Baylor too. Baylor, Texas Tech. You could even do Kansas State again, because I know that, you know, they swamped Miami the first 2 years they played them in, like, 11 and 12.
Baby Tebow, Colin.
Yeah, yeah, Klein. Colin Klein.
Colin Klein. I feel like, yeah.
Yeah. Tito, I want to talk to you some. Your boys.
All right.
Hey, hold on. I got to get into something that I saw on the timeline.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
your boys, Peter Rees. Peter's been a friend of the show. He's been on here about 3 times. He comes on and talks all that shit. But why is everybody – I saw on Twitter, like, everybody in the Miami market's coming at Peter. Like, what did he do?
Because when the new guy on the block is shit, fucking killing shit, people are going to be scared. That's why.
Who's this
radio? I'm standing my boy Pete. Hell yeah.
Who's this radio guy that was coming at Pete? He's the best.
He's the best insider. He's been on the game, been the best on the game for a while now. And, like, people are going to come at him and try to downplay his stuff? Nah.
Who was coming at Pete? Name some names for me. I'm not going to do that.
Why? It was some radio people. Tito's scared.
It's Beast the Fuck Fat Fuck Beast Radio Miami Heat Radio.
Hey, Ken, he doesn't call beef, bro. Send out beef, bro.
Look, put it to you this way. Peter has, like, one of the best cane sites out there. And then all these other people are still trying to adapt to it because his is free. And quite frankly, people get mad. It happens. I get it.
Yeah, I think people in the Miami market are scared of Pete. I think it's a pretty lazy market overall. A bunch of people that just sit at home and talk
except
shit.
Ivins. On. Ivins does a good job, though. We're just, of course, Ivins.
Yeah,
Ivins absolutely. Inside the league does a great job in general.
Pete and Ivins, like, are so far ahead of the game. Like, Ivins is at everything.
I think I like the two sites for different reasons. I think Ivins does a great job of reporting, of interviewing, of getting scoop. And I like Pete for his commentary mainly. I think Pete, you know, has a real way of getting his point across.
But Pete has a subscription site now, though, don't he? Because I've seen somebody make a joke about it saying that he's charging.
Well, no, he's got a thing coming up called Out the Huddle. And he's got, like, Entro Roll.
It's cool.
He's got, like, Entro Roll, Vilma, Romberg, a bunch of guys. Like, they're coming back. And they're telling old stories, and they're going to break down film, you know, every week of the upcoming opponent and after the games. Like, so he's going to – they have a charged site for you to get that content.
Right, and I think all these people are coming at Peter because they're scared. I don't think if Peter was so insignificant, nobody would be mentioning his name. Yeah, I think absolutely. He has a great idea. And you know what? At the end of the day, he's selling a product. So the people, the customers, are going to be the one that determines whether this thing, you know, does well or not. And I think it is going to do well. And you can tell it's going to do well because people are scared. People in this industry, the one thing I've learned about being in the media is these media people don't like to compete. I love to compete. But these media people want to, you know, come out and trash Pete because he's pushing the envelope and he's trying to change the way that, you know.
Because he's hungry. That man is hungry. He's trying to get that paper.
Hey, random Twitter meter is out of here, bro. We out here, baby. Random Twitter meter is out here, baby.
I don't know if I know you followed me, Tito, but, like, what I don't understand is, like, we have a podcast, right? And fucking Knowlescast has a podcast and Gator Breakdown and Pete. I wish only the best for them guys, man. There's enough revenue out here for us all to eat. Like, I don't even eating on that shit.
I'm chilling, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and man, I'll put it
I want to bring them all on this podcast and help them do better.
That's damn right.
I'll put it to you this way. Peter has never gone out of his way to ever insult another media person. And it seems like right when he brings out a new idea – somebody just felt the need to trash it right when it comes out of the gate. And, like, just on that fact alone, that's all I need to know about the situation. That's all I need to know about the situation. Because if it wasn't a problem, it would have never happened.
I agree. All right, Tito, we appreciate your AAC insight. We'll have you back on, but we got to get Sean King on the phone right now. We got an interview coming up with him.
Hey, can you get a Charlie Strong, dog? Hey, you get a Charlie Strong, we'll never hang up on you again. I'll tell Berg.
I'm working hard not to hang up on you right now, Tito.
I'm hungry, so I'm going to bounce first. Later, guys.
Oh, you hungry, too?
Like, we out the ball.
Hungry.
We out the ball.
All right. Thanks, Tito. All right, guys. Let's get on our first guest, Sean King, USF running backs coach.
Yo, I got to take a shit, man. Y'all do
We're getting the Black Lives Matter Sean King or the football Sean King?
Not the white Sean King.
All right. Well, I thought it was the Black Lives Matter, so I'm going to sit this one out.
All right, yeah. All right. See y'all on the other side.
All right, bro.
And we're back on the Big Three Roll-Up. We're bringing back a somebody that's been on the show before, Sean King. He's a former Tulane Green Wave. He's the former Buccaneer quarterback and a former Team Tampa OC, but he's currently coaching the Bulls. He's a running back coach at USF. Sean, how you doing?
I'm excellent. I must say that nothing will ever surpass my time with Team Tampa. That was truly the pinnacle of my existence.
Yeah, a real growing stage for you, would you say, Sean? I mean, I feel like that really vaulted you to the next level.
It did. I got the opportunity to meet the great Josh Newberg, the unbelievable Woody Brady, and my life has been trending upwards ever since.
Thank you. Well, speaking of trending upward, you guys are wrapping up the summer right now. Fall camp starts for you, what, in just a few days?
Yeah, we report July 23rd, and we get it going July 24th. We have an early season game for August 26th at San Jose, so we're starting a little bit earlier than most schools.
Yeah. How's your summer been?
It's been excellent. We got a lot of good things done. You know, of course, we have a new staff at South Florida, so just continuing to bond as a staff, as a team. You know, it's been pretty productive for us. The body types of our players has really changed. You know, shout out to Pat Moore, who's done a tremendous job with the strength and conditioning program. So we're excited, man.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of expectations coming off the most winning season ever at USF. You guys won 11 games for the first time in your history. But Willie Taggart left, Charlie Strong's in. But that didn't seem to deter the media, because at AAC Media Days, you guys were picked to win the conference. Now, USF's known to have a lot of success. You know, they've beaten teams like Florida State. They beat a number two West Virginia team. They've made some waves. However, in their entire history, they've never won a conference championship at any level. Do you think this is the year that y'all get it done?
Well, we got to prove it. We got to go out and do it. You know, we have the talent, you know, to do it. And, you know, now we just got to go out and continue to grow closer as a team, continue to care about each other, and be able to handle adversity. If we can do those three things, then, you know, absolutely. You know, I think we have as good a chance as anybody to bring that back home. And, you know, the thing that's so important to me is I want it for our seniors.
Right.
You know, these are guys that came into a situation in the university that was trying to find its footing, you know, after having had early success, wasn't having it. So I know where they've been and where they're at, and I want them to, you know, have that as they go into their next chapter in their life.
Yeah, speaking of seniors, you know, the main one returning is quarterback Quentin Flowers. He had an unbelievable junior season. He was one of two players to throw for over 2,000 yards and rush for over 1,000. The only other player to do it in the league last year was Lamar Jackson, who won the Heisman. So what have you seen in your second year, heading into your second year at USF, what have you seen this offseason from Quentin Flowers?
Well, he's starting to, you know, become more of a natural leader. You know, one of the things I used to stress to him last year was it's hard to lead until you produce. And so he went out and he really produced, you know, was outstanding for our team, for our program, for this community, for the city of Tampa, outstanding representative of this conference. And, you know, now a lot of expectation is there. And, you know, sometimes guys don't handle that transition well, but I can honestly say he's been outstanding from day one you know, when we got into spring football, morning runs, you know, summer conditioning. I mean, he's been in the front. He's been vocal. He's been all the things we've asked him to do.
Good. Last week, the 24/7 rankings got updated. We brought on Barton Simmons, and, you know, like every update, Barton catches hell every time. But one of the reasons fans give him hell is because they think that we weigh too much into 7-on-7 and in camps. And one of the reasons I brought you on is because I was thinking about what USF does. And over the last 2 years that you've been there, you've literally been a part of every style camp that there is. You've been a part of the showcase. You've been a part of the one-day instructional. You've been a part of the 7-on-7. You know, you've been a part of the satellite camps. So in your opinion, which is, from an evaluation standpoint from the colleges, from the college level, which is the is your favorite style camp?
Well, I think they all have, you know, positives. You know, I think when you're trying to figure out what a kid is, how talented a kid is, what kind of character does he have from a competition standpoint, what are his measurables, you know, how tall is he, how much does he weigh, is he flexible, does he have bend, what's his change of direction, what's his straight line speed, like you're always taking snapshots trying to put the puzzle together. And each one of those camps is kind of a different setting, a different environment, and you get kind of a different little snapshot. You know, we have a sling and shoot. It's a 7-on-7. You really get to see the kid interact with his teammates. You get to see him compete against other elite opponents. We have the one-day camps where you really get to evaluate how the kids move. You know, you have the satellite camps where you might go somewhere you wouldn't normally be and see a kid that you wouldn't normally see. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have the star-studded, you know, Saturday Night Light camps where you kind of get a large group of kids in that class and try and make them believe that they could all come to this school and all be a part of something special. So I think each camp has a little unique aspect, you know, that just kind of helps you build a puzzle.
A lot of people want to trash 7-on-7. There's a group of fans and even some coaches have been outspoken about it. And you've been on both sides as a coach of 7-on and an evaluator. A lot of people think that it has no value, but I completely disagree with that. From an evaluation standpoint at the college level, what do you guys look for in 7-on-7? And do you find value in evaluating 7-on-7?
I definitely think there's value in it. I don't think it's the end-all, be-all, but I definitely think there's value in it. You know, as I said, you're trying to put a puzzle together. And what 7-on-7 allows you to do is watch a kid compete against other elite players, you know, watch him, you know, in an environment where you really get to evaluate his ability to run routes and his ability to cover, because there's not a pass rush that's kind of impeding that evaluation. You know, a lot of times in 11-on-11, you know, if you can't block the other team's defensive line, it's hard to evaluate if the cornerbacks can really cover, if the receivers can really catch the ball and not getting a lot of opportunities to catch passes. So it eliminates some of that so you can really hone in and focus on the skill players. So in that aspect, I think it's very valuable.
Okay, while we're on recruiting, I'm going to go ahead and ask you a quick question, Sean King. We have this whole – I have a conversation with a few guys before about, like, offers and committable offers. All offers are uncommittable because I know you guys throw out a lot of offers each year. How do you relay that to a kid? How does that play out as far as you offering a kid but telling them they have to wait? Like, how does that work?
Well, I can just speak on the approach that I take, and I just use honesty. You know, is the best policy approach. You know, I have Pinellas County and Hillsborough County, and, you know, I'm very familiar with the coaches, with a lot of the families, you know, a lot of the kids. So I just keep it 100 right from the beginning. And whatever the situation is regarding that specific prospect, then I'm just honest from the beginning. And as the situation changes, I'm honest with the kid, good or bad. You know, moving closer to being committable, moving, you know, in a direction where we need some further evaluation. And I think if you do that at the end of the day, even if they don't agree with maybe what the truth is, you're going to always maintain their respect.
Got you. Have you ever had an issue where you double back on a kid? Well, at first you didn't really offer him, then he blows up and you come back and he's not really like feeling you. You ever had that happen?
Yeah, that happens a lot. You know, you have to think, you know, how much did you change from the beginning of your junior year of high school to graduation day?
Yeah.
So these kids are evolving. So, you know, you're always making evaluations, but it's based on what they are. Sometimes you're trying to project. You know, sometimes the kid's playing out of position, so you don't have an ability to really evaluate him on game film at another position. So, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts in recruiting, you know, and as things change, you know, sometimes opinions change, sometimes priorities change, and it's just a part of the landscape that we live in.
Gotcha. Now, you grew up a Florida boy, man. I know you had to cheer for one of the big three. Which one of the big three you cheer for as a kid?
You put me on the spot right there, right? I cheer for U.S. stuff, even though they didn't have football.
Ah, I'll tell you now.
Come on.
Yeah, that's what I, you know what? I grew up a Bucks fan. I'll be honest with you. My dad was a minister, and I used to sneak out of church when the Bucks were on the road because that's the only time they were on TV. Because back then, the home games weren't on.
It
wasn't a sellout.
It was blacked out.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I was a Bucks fan all the way.
You're trying to escape
but
the question,
I was a Florida
man.
Boy at the heart. I was a Florida boy at the heart. I know you're a Seminole fan, so I'm not going to say anything negative about.
No, he's the Gator.
Oh, Gator fan. My
Come on,
bad.
Sean, you know
My
I'm
bad.
The Seminole. Come on.
I apologize. You're a Gator fan, Seminole, Hurricane, they're all the same thing. So what we're trying to do is make you a Bull fan. So that's the object of these podcasts is to have Bull Nation become a viable – part of the hierarchy in the state of Florida. We're trying to make this a big four now.
Y'all have to make it. You think if y'all run the table, another question. You think if y'all run the table, y'all make the playoffs?
Well, I know this. We can only run the table if we beat San Jose State. So all our focus right now is on beating San Jose State.
Sean Saban, ask you a question.
I mean, they're gonna be geared up for us. Now, the one thing about expectations is you go from being – you know, the hunter to the hunted. And that's a different dynamic. I mean, that's a different mindset. That's a different approach that, you know, your guys have to have week in and week out. And, you know, we got to be ready. I mean, we love the expectation. We want this program to get to the point where we have expectations every year to be extremely good. But you got to earn that. And the first step in that is going out this year and starting by beating San Jose State.
Absolutely. What do you think? Because you just mentioned USF jumping into it and making it a big four. What do you think USF needs to do as a program to jump into that talk?
To win. You know, every program that's become a big-time program got there by one way, and that's winning. Like, if you win, they'll come. If you win enough, everything that you desire to happen will happen in college football.
So you're going to run the table. That's what's going to happen.
Well, we got to win. You got to beat San Jose State. You can't put for the horse in football. You follow football. You've watched football. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything can happen, especially when you're dealing with 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds. So you got to be prepared every week.
So if you was going to replace one of the big three, one of them got to fall out. Who falling out of the big three?
It matters not.
This man won't mention the team.
Yeah. Oh. So Sean, we actually have a, you know, this is the big three roll up. We don't want to change the name to the big four roll up. So I think this year, if Miami ends the season unranked and USF ends the season ranked, I think we're going to pull Tito in and kick Kev out. Kev represents Miami. I think we're going to have Tito on the show and it's going to be the big three roll up with UF, FSU and USF.
Yeah, I follow you guys on Twitter. You guys give Kev a hard time, boys.
We give Kev a hard time.
Oh, y'all give Kev a hard time.
Hey,
man.
Kev, the deep Kev ain't even here. Kev is David Ruffin us right now. He ain't even here, bro.
You know, I tend to stay out of these college football arguments simply because, mm-hmm. like, I learned when I got to the Bucks that my alma mater is still kind of in a rebuilding state, so it's best not to throw stones. We live in a glass house.
We throw plenty of stones.
All day.
Well, let's bring it back actually to Quentin Flowers, and you know, there's a lot of talk about him in the Heisman race and potentially a legitimate candidate. But you know, he didn't really get the recognition last year, not at the national level. What does he need to do this year? Is it more than just does he need to put up bigger stats, or do you think just the fact that he kind of laid it down last year will carry over to this year?
He's got to win. We've got to win. You know, for a G5 player to get any kind of Heisman consideration, the team has to be really successful. I think that's where it starts. And once, you know, that success leads to a larger platform, a bigger audience, then you have to perform on those stages. And that's the part that you can control. The other part, you don't worry about. Mm-hmm. You know, I had probably as good of a year in a nine, and we didn't have Power Five at the time, but, you know, Tulane was probably, you know, in the same conference affiliation that we are now currently. And it's hard, you know, to actually win it, you know, but just the fact that he's in the conversation and he's such a great person, I'm so happy for him. Like, I'm telling you guys, he's one of the most unbelievable young men you could ever meet. If you ever get the chance to sit down with him and talk to him, considering all the things he's had to overcome in his life, you know, to be as grounded and humble and as hardworking as he is, man, that is an unbelievable kid. It really is.
Yeah, I've read a lot about him and covered him out of high school, you know, not really knowing the whole backstory in high school, but he was always a competitor and he was always a fighter. And you can tell that, you know, that those characteristics have helped him through some of the struggles that he's had to deal with on and off the field.
And Quentin Flowers is America. I mean, for all of his life, people have told him what he couldn't do, and yet he's continually succeeded. You're not tall enough to play quarterback. You know how to write skill set. Like, you can't go get switched here. Like, can you just imagine living and always having people doubt you and say what you can't do and then being able to get the last laugh? You know, I'm just so happy for him. You know, I just pull for him to go out this year and have a tremendous year and us have a tremendous year and he get all the accolades he deserves.
Right. You played quarterback. You coached quarterback at the college level. Miami fans are thinking that Nikosi Perry, who signed with Miami last year, is going to come in as a true freshman. He wasn't an early enrollee. He just enrolled in the summer. How difficult is it for a quarterback to come in? Is it realistic that a guy like Nikosi Perry can come in and learn the system well enough to go on the road in week three at Tallahassee and be the starting quarterback?
Well, I don't want to speak on a specific player or university, but I'll talk big picture college football as a whole. Any incoming freshman that doesn't early enroll, it's very difficult to contribute. You know, it's just so many adjustments happening at once. You're away from home. You're having to figure out how to manage your time. You're in a new weight program. You were bigger, stronger, faster teammates. You're competing against bigger, stronger, faster, trying to learn a system. You're trying to, you know, learn the drills that team. There's so many things that are evolving and changing. If you don't early enroll, it's very hard to contribute, especially early in your freshman year, in my opinion.
Can a quarterback
and
know
that because?
Team? Yeah, go ahead.
And I just say that because when you early enroll, you go through spring practice.
Right.
You know, so the fall camp isn't the first time you're practicing and working on that system. You've done it, you know, for a full set of spring practices. So it just gives you a huge advantage.
Yeah, yeah. And can a quarterback come in and win the team over in that small amount of time? Is that possible?
If a team's void of leadership, absolutely. You know, and you know, that's the thing when you're doing, you know, you're evaluating and the kids are going to, you know, try and bring into your program, you know, that's often a very overlooked aspect of the evaluation. Is what kind of intangibles does this young man possess? Especially if we're in a position where we don't have vocal leadership or we don't have, you know, a certain type of leadership that we're looking for, then you start to look for that in the kids you're recruiting because, you know, for your program to thrive, you know, it needs certain things. And internal leadership in that locker room is one of them.
All right, so last question. Like, the average fan, I always get asked this a lot from just people on Twitter and whatnot, like the offseason and the workouts, and the guys getting together. How does that work as far as the quarterback, the captain of the team, getting everybody together like 7-on-7? I know the coaches can't be involved. So how does that work?
Well, the strength and conditioning coach is going to be your main guy in the offseason. You know, in the summer, he's the one that's going to be there all the time. He has his thumb, you know, on top of him. He has a feel for what's going on. You know, and he relays that information to the full-time coaches. But having, you know, a quarterback that'll take control of some of the other things, you know, getting the guys together to throw, getting the guys together to go over the plays and all that kind of stuff is important, or at least having that leadership, even if it doesn't come from the quarterback. You know, some places that's an old lineman, sometimes a running back, you know, might linebacker, but just having those guys in place, I think, is very important.
Okay, when are you guys kicking off fall camp?
We report July 23rd, first day of practice, July 24th. You know, we like I said, San Jose State.
That's next week.
You know, they've had all summer. Monday. You're rocking and rolling.
They are rocking and rolling.
San Jose State,
next week.
They gunning for us. We got to be ready.
Summer is over.
It is. Vacation's over. We back on the grind.
Right.
Time to chase all these dreams, right? The big three roll-up. We're going to make it the big four roll-up. I know y'all hadn't.
I got faith in you, dog.
Full marketing plan. It's time to get to the print company. And then
hey, Tito waiting. We got Tito waiting in the trenches, man. He ready to go.
Yeah. I'm grooming Tito. Well, Sean, I appreciate you coming on. Running back coach at USF. If you want to follow him on Twitter, he's a great follow, especially if you're into boxing. And that's
tell him to write Sean King. I want to follow in the civil rights movement.
Yeah. I'm the original.
This isn't the white Sean King. This is Sean King, and his handle is @realSeanKing. You can follow him on Twitter. Sean, we appreciate you. I got one more question for you. You know, you always tell me that the podcast has changed me. I don't think the guys on the pod feel that. I think I'm as humble as I've ever been. But why do you always say that the pod has changed me?
Well,
yeah, ratchet.
You know, no, Kev, here's what happens. When you know people and you know who they are, when they become someone else, you notice. Like Newberg used to be a guy that woke up early in the morning. He was a grinder. He got on the phone. You know, he made calls, he researched, you know, he did things that hardworking people do.
Now he got this
podcast. Yeah, he got this podcast. He's become some sort of a celebrity. He sleeps at 10 a.m. I mean, doesn't return phone calls. I mean, he's changed.
Sean, you call me every morning at 7 a.m., and I pick up every morning.
Hey, man.
I'm not going to say that that's the truth at all.
Bird gave us a good Sean King quote, man. What is this, Bird?
Oh, yeah. Don't let your nightlife affect your day life.
I've got to give credit where credit is due. I don't want to be sued for copyright infringement. That came from Sterling Gilbert. I got that from Sterling Gilbert. I told him I've added that to my list of quotes. I take things all the time and add them.
Yeah, I added that to mine, too.
Presentation.
To me, that means – I took that to mean, and I really do like that quote, but I took that to mean, like, you do whatever you got to do at night, whether it be partying or staying up late, talking to girls, whatever you got to do, as long as it doesn't affect your day life.
Absolutely.
Is that how you take it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good model.
I agree with it, especially at our age.
I say the one thing that you learn as you get older, as it pertains to nightlife, just go to bed.
Yeah.
When you're young, man. You always want to go to bed. Like, you sitting up like, I got to find something to do. You get older, you're like, I can't wait to go to bed.
Man, sleep. I look forward to sleep, man. I'm telling you that shit right now.
For real. Hey, we got to link up, too, sometimes, y'all. Hey, sometimes we got to get together, man, and watch a game.
I'm down. We can do it Sunday, whenever.
I'm going to take them to a USF game.
That'd be awesome. We should have a good turnout this year, too. Season ticket sales are up. You know, it's a buzz going. You know, people are talking about the program. You know, I think it's going to manifest itself, you know, with the home crowds, which will be excellent for the team.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. We're going to do
Then I can get out of my future head coach voice and jump back into my St. Pete voice.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm trying to get the St. Pete voice. I can ask you these questions off-air and get the real deal.
Before I got to let you go. Break down Mayweather and your boy. What's his name?
McGregor.
McGregor and Mayweather. You know what's crazy about this fight is that you got to love America. Like, this is the power of wrestling. This shows you how huge wrestling is in America. The fact that the money generated is going to be so substantial that these two guys can get the purses they're getting. I ain't hating. If you can get it, get it. And this is the most lopsided contest like in the history of like regular boxing.
Can McGregor land a actual punch? Do you think, you know, is he going to land a punch that matters in this fight?
He won't, and he won't, and here's why. Floyd knows he's older.
Right.
So Floyd knows that as you get older, you don't handle punches as well as you used to. So why find out in front of all these people that you can't take a punch like you used to? So he's going to go out of his way not to get hit.
Of course. That's what he does. He's a defensive.
Do you think McGregor is purposely putting out these trash videos of him training?
Oh, Man, McGregor getting a boxer, man.
He looks
Have you tough. Ever got, like, I've sparred before. Like, boxing looks like it's easy until you get in there and you're tired and somebody's hitting you in your nose while you're tired. Bro.
So you Three think he's rounds, putting out these bro. Videos? You think he's putting it, these videos out thinking, damn, I look good in this. I want this on the internet? Or do you think he's sandbagging?
Here's the thing. He does look good compared to what he's done before. Like, you know, when the 300, when people used to say, like, the 300M looked like a Bentley.
Yeah, it looks like
a Bentley until you pull up next to a Bentley.
you see what I'm saying?
Like, McGregor looks like he's doing something substantial until you look at somebody that's never lost as a boxer.
It's amazing that people buy this fight. Like, they selling this, and people going to buy it. Like, it's amazing.
Bro, did you see those press conferences? Like, oh.
They over the top, bro.
But at the end of the day, it's entertaining.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That's why I go back to my point. The WWE, this is the power of wrestling. Because this is wrestling.
Yep.
And it's our culture that we're in with reality TV. Like you said, man, these press conferences are selling the fight. Their athletic ability isn't really selling the fight.
I mean, they're sold out. It's people everywhere. Like, I just saw a video of, like, McGregor fans in London, like, trying to tip over, like, Floyd's, like, Rolls Royce. Like,
yeah, man. It's crazy.
I feel like Say that again?
Only in boxing now we can have, like, the true heel, you know? Like, it used to be in sports, but now sports are too politically correct, and it seems like boxing is the only sport where, like, Floyd can really get people to hate him, and he does a great job of that.
Well, I say this. Political correctness went out the window when they elected Trump. Like, I don't know how much TV you watch lately, but no one's politically correct anymore. Trump has made it okay to say whatever you feel like you want to say, and you could just say you didn't say it or somebody's lying.
No, Trump has proved
hashtag just, fake news and move on.
Trump has proved that you can tweet through anything. Just tweet through it, like a man Silk says.
All right, man, y'all have a great night, man. Let me get ahead of these kids.
All right, see you later.
All right, man, hold it down, man.
All right, well, that was Sean King, another great performance from him. I think he was last on, like, around February. We had him on right after Sunday.
Yeah.
Right after
Sunday. Been a little minute.
Sean's been a great guest for us.
We got to get out there and kick it with him, man.
Yeah, I think we should go to a USF game this season, get you guys on the sideline.
Oh, shit, make it happen, baby.
Yeah. We'll do that. Let's go check on Kev, see if he's done in the bathroom. Bring him back on.
They're dead, bro.
Back on the Big Three Roll-Up, we got their second guest of the evening. We have Cole Kublick of the SEC Network. He does some sideline analysts for them. He's also the host of the Cube Show. You can find that Monday through Friday from 6 to 10 a.m. on WMP, or you can stream it on umpsports.com. Cole, welcome to the Big Three Roll-Up.
Hey, man, I'm glad to be here. I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, man. I love your Twitter account. I only came across you recently, but, man, you are like the go-to when it comes to OLDL. I love when you break out those vines and kind of take everybody into the X's and O's of playing in the trenches. I got a question for you. In this day and age of the passing game, do you think it's more important to have a great offensive line or a great defensive line? Which is more important?
Well, yeah, it's an intriguing question. I'm still going to say offensive line because I think that commodity that you're attempting to protect in your quarterback. I mean, we know this is football is becoming a quarterback driven game. It used to be, the NFL is a quarterback driven league, and now we're seeing that college football is becoming more of a quarterback driven league. I think football is becoming more of a quarterback driven game, and there's always going to be outliers that don't necessarily have to have an elite talent there from an arm perspective or athleticism perspective. But I had a really cool conversation with Will Muschamp last year when I had one of their games, and we were talking about the value of edge rushers. And he said, Cole, I'm almost going down to where interior rushers are becoming as valuable or more valuable than edge guys, because those edge guys oftentimes don't even have time to get there regardless. Even if they're winning right off the ball and they're beating the tackle on their first move, that ball's still out so quick, they're not going to be able to have as much of an impact on as many passing plays as we're going to see as maybe as a defensive tackle who can eat up space, he can bat balls down, he can pressure the quarterback, he can make him move in the pocket. So for me, I'm still going to say offensive line, because no matter what, you have to protect that commodity that's the quarterback. Number two, he's going to need time at some point. Not everything can be a tunnel screen, a bubble screen, an uncovered, you know, a 2- and 3-step drop, get the ball out. You know, it's not even a run and shoot offense. You're going to get a 5-step drop every now and then. You're going to get 3rd and 8, 3rd and 10, 3rd and 12. You're going to be down by 14, 21 points in the fourth quarter and need to come back and need those elongated drops. So as a former offensive lineman, I guess it should be kind of obvious, but I'm going to go offensive line, still more important.
Right. And you played offensive line. You were a center at Auburn. You played there from 1996 to 2001. While you were there, you were coached by the great Rick Trickett, who's currently at Florida State. And when I was doing some research for you, I actually came across a article that we ran on Knowles 24/7, the site that I work for, about a year ago. And this was we got a quote from you, Cole, on Rick Trickett. This is what you said, quote, "I was kind of known by a group as the dumbest motherfucker that Rick Trickett had ever coached, because that's what I was referred to on a regular basis." Cole, what are your thoughts on Rick Trickett?
I was referred to that on a daily basis, so not just a regular basis. That's Rick, you know. It's I have sort of made my bed with opening people's eyes to, you know, what he really is as a coach and who he really is as a coach. But, you know, Rick Trickett knows offensive line play, and mm-hmm. he understands how to get, I don't want to say the best out of guys, but he knows how to get something out of guys. And, you know, he understands the fundamentals. He has a very militant way of coaching. And it's difficult. He's not easy to play for. He's a tough guy to play for. He's a tough guy to be around. It's easy to get in his doghouse, but he's not an unfair guy. You know, he's not somebody who I think didn't play the best candidate because he didn't like him. Would he make your life more difficult if he didn't like you or wasn't as big a fan of you? Sure. And he had his tendencies like all other guys do. You know, did he drop expletives like that on us every day? Yes. Did we do more things than all the other position groups did? Yes. Did we did some things that were pretty asinine and ridiculous and ludicrous when I look back on it? Yeah, 100%. But, I mean, hell, Hugh Knoll was my offensive line coach after Rick was, and he lined us up and made us fight mano-a-mano one-on-one after practice one day. So it's not like Rick's the only one that's doing – you know, dumbass drills as an offensive line coach and making guys do things that they're not going to like. So he's tough. He's not easy to play for. He gave me some really good memories, because every time I'm around my old teammates, we have fun talking about him. I wouldn't want my kid playing for him.
That's what I was going to ask you. So if your son is a top offensive lineman, if your son's a top offensive lineman, let's say, you know, he's one of those top tier 10 guys in the country, why not would you want him to play for Rick?
There are so many more potentially enjoyable experiences out there at different places. I don't care if it's Bama, Georgia, you know, Tennessee, whoever a rival of Auburn might be that I might not like. I'm going to push my kid that. I mean, ultimately, I'm letting my kid make their own decisions. But that's one that I'm probably going to stand up and fight for. Not that he's going to be around, because my son's 6 weeks old, so it's not like he's going to be coaching. But, yeah, that would be one that I would step up and say, listen, son, let's sit down and have a serious talk here. This is a bad idea, and I really don't want you to do it.
Right, because there's more than one way to be successful. So you're saying Rick Trickett's way can make you a success, but there's just other ways to do it? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, he gets something out of you. And
right.
I mean, he got the most out of me, because I was the guy that, you know, his stuff kind of motivated me. Like, I really wanted to prove him wrong. I mean, I didn't want to be referred to as that every day. But like anything in life, you know, scare tactics and fear tactics are very real. And when all you're thinking about is how much you're going to push the sled after practice every day, or how many up downs you're going to do after practice, or how many hours you're going to spend going back through the chute, And he basically lets you know that that's coming when you still have an hour and a half left in practice. You're not going to be very effective for the rest of that practice. You're probably going to save some juice so you don't die and pass out. His famous quote was that I'll never forget. The one quote, the only quote that you need to know about Rick Trickett was, "You'll pass out before you'll die." That's all you need to know. And we got that every single day. You'll pass out before you die. And
he was right.
Next to the stone in there as well. Yeah, I assume so. It might be 10 seconds before you die, but you will definitely pass out before you die.
All right. So from a non-personal standpoint, what was your evaluation of Rick Trickett's offensive line last year? Because we really saw DeAndre Francois get the shit beat out of him. But a lot of, you know, there was a lot of analysis that said DeAndre Francois held the ball too long. What about you? What'd you think?
You know, I can equate it from an SEC perspective to what Arkansas did last year. And Austin Allen had a really nice year. When I went back and studied him this offseason, I'm thinking, man, how did this dude survive these games? I thought a lot of the same things when I went back and looked at Francois. And there are definitely times when you see him and you feel like the ball should be out. You feel like he should know that he's got to get the ball out. But there were so many times when an initial move was made by a defensive lineman and the immediate pressure was there that it didn't matter if they had slide protection, max protection, three-step drop. He wasn't going to have an opportunity to deliver the football and not take some sort of a hit. They were subpar last year. I mean, that's just the reality. And I think if they didn't have a dude as talented as what Dalvin Cook was last year, it would have been a totally different season because the kind of bounce out runs and cutback runs that he had, that he created. And listen, I'm the number one guy who gets more offended when announcers say, look at that quarterback buying time in the pocket. Look at that running back create his own space. I mean, that rarely happens, but a lot of times last year with Dalvin Cook, he made his own space and made his own lane and found his own room. So that is the biggest concern for me going into this season for Florida State, because if that group plays the way that they did last year with the D-lines that they're going to face this year, they're going to get that kid killed. He's not going to be able to survive another season by allowing run through and guys to win on initial moves and basically have free shots at him throughout the course of the season.
Hey, Cole, this is Kev.
What's up, Kev?
I pay attention to Miami. I'm gonna give you five defensive linemen. I want you to rank them for me. 1 to 5.
Okay.
Rashawn Gary, Ed Oliver, Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, and JoJo Jackson. Five guys that are coming to our sophomore year.
I'm probably going to go Dexter Lawrence 1 because I think he is more physically gifted than the rest of those guys. Like, I mean, he, you know, he's kind of like like Deron Payne at Alabama. Like, he is capable of doing things in his body, in his frame, at his size that just no really other guys are able to do. I think I would be able to do more with a Dexter Lawrence than I would be able to do with a lot of other guys.
You blame the three technique, Gary, the five technique.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think Dexter Lawrence could sort of morph into what Christian Wilkins is doing. Now, he might outgrow that, and he might – I mean, Christian Wilkins can be like a legit edge guy. And, I mean, he's close to 300 pounds, and it's pretty impressive to watch him do it. You know, Rashawn Gary is kind of the same dude. He's not built the same way. Like, he's not a true edge guy. But he would probably be next, to be honest with you, just because I like his versatility. I mean, I'm not making a comparison as a player because Jonathan Allen is one of the best defensive linemen I've ever seen in my lifetime play college football. But he sort of gives you that Jonathan Allen versatility where he's stout enough to play a three technique. He can go out on the edge in like a 7 or a wide 5 and rush the passer and get there and make moves and do some different things. So Rashawn Gary would probably be next. I'm going to need you to – I know you said Brian Burns was coming up next.
Brian Burns.
I think about Burns.
So Brian Burns, Ed Oliver, and JoJo Jackson.
All right, so it's got to be Ed Oliver next, and then probably JoJo Jackson and then Burns, just because Jackson has productivity that we can't look past. With Burns, I kind of want to see a little bit more. I saw some flashes, and I saw some things that I really liked. Here's my deal with Ed Oliver. Like, I sat down with Booger McFarland at SEC Media Days, and we went back and forth by ourselves at dinner for probably 45 minutes on Ed Oliver. And, you know, Booger kind of sold me on you're getting carried away with production. You're getting carried away with what you've seen this guy do and, like, the impact that he's had as opposed to what he's capable of doing. So kind of in that Dexter Lawrence mold, like, I think Ed Oliver's being wasted. That's my personal opinion.
So at Houston, right?
At Houston. Yes, correct. I mean, it's not so much just playing it. That he's at Houston, but what they're doing with him, the fact that he's lined up at a zero nose, so head up on a center, and they're looping him outside of the offensive tackle like 50-60% of the time. Now, that's how he got a lot of those batted balls last year. And if you guys remember, probably like week 5, 6, 7, it became a huge statistic that he had like 17 batted balls and the rest of college football had like 20 or something stupid, whatever it was. But like he was knocking balls down left and right. And you give him credit for that. He has awareness, and he obviously is a guy who understands where he is on the field and how to manage what they're asking him to do. But for me, I mean, he's a guy that I feel like if you lined him up in a gap, like in the A gap, B gap, and just let him attack and let him go, like he could wreak 10 times more havoc than he actually does. So I like what he's capable of. I just don't really like the way that he's being used. So Ed Oliver will probably be 3, but you're going to get a ton of guys that are taking Ed Oliver 1, and not just 1 as the D lineman, but 1 as far as any defensive player in college football.
And I think the reason that is because he had his 2 biggest games against Oklahoma and Louisville.
Sure. Yeah.
Right? Like when the Louisville quarterback, Lamar Jackson from Palm Beach County, was like everyone was talking about him, like Ed Oliver had the biggest game on TV when everybody was watching, right?
Yeah, and see, but I'll offset that a little bit with, you know, I tweeted out earlier this year that I think maybe, I mean, I would argue this, the most impressive accomplishment that I have seen in my college football lifetime is Lamar Jackson winning the Heisman Trophy behind that offensive line. You guys think Florida State's offensive line was subpar last year? Go put some Louisville film on and watch those guys. And watch guys just basically look like they're playing in concrete cleats and can't move to even attempt to pick up a blitzer or can't even move to attempt a guy that's stunning into the A gap or B gap. I mean, that kid, he was running for his life on a regular basis. Now, thankfully for him, he has that kind of escapability. But I mean, it was embarrassing to watch the way that Louisville offensive line played last year. So I'll offset what he did in that game a little bit with the fact that, I mean, go put that bowl game on against LSU. I mean, it wasn't just Arden Key. I mean, he made the entire group look like first-round draft picks. Not Jackson, but the offensive line.
Okay, so you just tweeted out last night your top five defensive lines. You put Clemson at 1, NC State, Ohio State, Miami, Florida State. So I'm a Miami fan, so I get it. But a lot of Florida State fans will say, what about Nandi and Christmas and Sweat and Burns? What about the Miami defensive line sets them above the FSU line?
Depth. I mean, honestly, it's straight up depth. And I'm not even going to pretend to go back and forth about the whole, you know, outside linebacker defensive end argument. We'll just kind of throw them all in there together. I like Josh Sweat a lot. I do. I think he's great. And I think Derek Nnadi, with what he's asked to do, and people have to take this in context now, because if I say this and an Alabama fan's listening, they're going to piss their pants because I'm not saying Deron Payne, or a Clemson fan will probably do the same thing because I'm not saying Dexter Lawrence. Those guys aren't asked to two-gap and take up space, so basically occupy offensive linemen the way that Nnadi is in that defense. Nnadi is not as much of an attacker as some of those other defensive tackles that I just named were. He's not out on an island near as much in between a guard and the tackle or on the outside shade of a guard as those other D tackles are. I mean, Derek Nnadi's job is 80% of the time to be lined up in some form or fashion over the center and try and occupy 2 blocks and try to wreck run plays by doing so or collapse the pocket in the middle by doing so. He does that better than anybody else in the country. Now, there's not a lot of guys who are even capable of attempting to do that, so most defenses don't play that way. But as far as eating space and taking up blockers and ruining the run game by sort of reading and reacting, Derek Nnadi does it in the middle of the defense better than anybody. I just think that when you look at Miami's group, first and foremost, you have different type guys. It's kind of what I like about NC State, too. I mean, because Miami can hit you with Norton inside, and they can hit you with McIntosh inside, and you get with Norton sort of that bigger, physical, prototypical, like SEC defensive tackle that we're all used to seeing. And then you get a little bit lighter dude in McIntosh, and then you get out on the edge, And it's like Chad Thomas is sort of that NFL defensive end, prototype, long, huge, gigantic NBA wingspan. But then, like, I love watching a dude like Trent Harris play football. I mean,
hey, no one's going to
watch Trent Harris, or no one's going to see Trent Harris in his uniform and say, you know, they're going to be like, who is that dude? Like, why are you even talking about him? But I put Miami on this offseason, and it's like, who in the hell is 33? Like, constantly in the backfield. Every time he gets on the field, he's causing problems. And, yeah, he looks like a high school fullback out there playing defensive end, but who cares if the dude's making plays, you know? So,
right.
I mean, I love the depth that the Miami D-line has. I like the fact that you have different style players. And I'll be honest with you, part of it is the way that those guys are asked to play. I mean, they're an attacking front. Miami's not sitting back and reading anybody. They're coming at you. And Florida State does a little bit of both. So they're different D lines. But for me, the one that I enjoy watching the most, the one that I would hate going up against more than the other, would be Miami. But it's not like Florida State is, you know, five or seven teams removed from that.
Right. All right, so you don't remember this because you have a bunch more followers than me, but me and you kind of went back and forth on Twitter about Casey McDermott. Like, you saw a film that you loved, and when he came in, he was like a five-star kid. He was an offensive tackle. Now he's an offensive guard. And so he hasn't really lived up to his hype. But tell me what you like about Casey McDermott.
First and foremost is just athleticism. And the first thing, when you get a guy who's 6'6", 6'7", 300, 320 pounds, that I'm going to watch is his feet. And because I think if he's got feet, then we can work with you. And we're going to be able to find something that you're going to be able to do. Now, does that mean that a kid doesn't get his ass kicked in a certain game or a couple games? Absolutely not. I mean, perfect example, go watch those Ohio State tackles from last year. I mean, those guys are pretty looking a group as you're going to find in college football. I mean, they are your prototypical, like, if God made offensive tackles, he made the kids that are Ohio State right now. But they got smoked half the time that they had to go into 5- and 7-step drops because mainly they weren't used to doing it. They were just too young. They didn't have the feet to do it. I think McDermott's got really good feet. I think he's a little bit of a backbender, and he doesn't understand correct posture just yet. If he can get that, he's got the wingspan, he's got the feet, he's got the frame. And I just think he's got a little bit of nasty to him. And then sometimes having some nasty to you at tackle gets you in trouble because you get over-aggressive and you get beat in a hurry. And a lot of times with these offensive linemen in college, I saw it with a kid at Alabama last year, Lester Cotton, going in at guard. He comes in and he's a little bit dominant in the run game. He busts a few assignments. He gets beat in pass pro one time. And the next thing you know, he's like mentally just taken out of the game. He's not the same kind of guy. So I just think McDermott has the frame, the feet, and a little bit of nasty when he gets latched on, and that's kind of what I liked about him when I saw. Consistency, I would agree with you, is definitely not there.
All right, so you're an Auburn guy, right? Like, do you root for Auburn? Like,
I mean, I graduated from Auburn and played at Auburn, so I want to see him do well.
Hey,
yeah,
so
I try to be objective.
So Stidham, so Jared Stidham, how big is that? Like, do you follow recruiting? What about Justin Fields' thing? Like, you see Justin Fields end up in Auburn?
I am not a huge guy as far as being into recruiting, so I'm not going to pretend like I know a whole lot about it. The guys that say they know about it say they feel good about him ending up at Auburn. I think the tricky part there is you got to manage the fact that Stidham's got 3 years of eligibility. And if he's as good as a lot of people say he is, do we think he's going to be there for three more years? Probably not, no. But you know, I know someone that's talked to Art Briles that has said that Art told him he's the best passer he's ever recruited. I pulled every clip that he had from Baylor. The kid is super deliberate. He gets the ball out fast. He can make every throw. He's got sneaky mobility. He manages the pocket well. And his personality is exactly what you would want from a collegiate starting quarterback. I mean, he's a very presidential dude. And he understands the leadership factor that needs to go into being a quarterback. The problem, or if there's a problem with Auburn this fall, it's not going to be on Jared Stidham. It'll be on who's actually managing the offense. If Chip Lindsey has handed the keys to the offense and he can game plan and he can call plays the way that he wants to, there will be no issues with the Auburn offense. I think they will have one of the best in the SEC. Now, if there's a juggling act like there was the last two seasons, and sometimes it's Gus and sometimes it's Chip, and Chip maybe can't develop a game plan the way that he wants to during the week, then that offense has a real chance of getting bogged down.
Hey, Cole, what's up? It's Silk, man. How's it going?
Hey, Phil. Doing great, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I appreciate you for coming on. My man Tilly on Twitter been suggesting you for a couple weeks now. We finally pulled it off, man.
I appreciate it.
Hey, you got Florida ranked number one in the SEC defensive line. I just want you to speak more about that because, I mean, I like our starters, but I don't think we have a lot of depth. I think that's what we maybe heard at. But you got us ahead of Bama. You can explain that a little bit for me?
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine I do radio in Alabama. I played at Auburn. I live in Alabama. I lived in Alabama my whole life. So I've kind of had to answer this question and deal with the hate that comes along with that. And when I say that, I mean not having Alabama ranked first in anything that I put out publicly is going to be a problem for me. I agree with you that depth is going to be an issue for this D-line. But I think Parry Clark can be every bit of what Caleb Brantley was last year at some point. And I think Kaven Bryan is a nice changeup for an interior guy because you get Clark there who's sort of your power, your brick house, your space eater. And Kaven Bryan can be your quicker guy. So if you're running an odd front, I mean, Parry Clark's your guy that's going to be down towards the center. He's going to be eating space. And I think Kaven Bryan is somebody who's still on the interior of the offensive line, can get out on the edge and give you kind of an interior pass rush. I love his quickness. I think he's got good technique. I love his wingspan, uses his hands very well. Now, I saw those two guys in a very limited capacity towards the end of last season, but I was really impressed with what I saw. Zuniga can absolutely get it off the edge. And I think C.C. Jefferson can be, you know, sort of a do-it-all guy for this D-line. I mean, I think he could go out wide, and he's got enough speed to rush the passer there. I think on third and longs, you can put him at D-tackle, you know, get him one-on-one, get him freed up against the guard, which will help avoid some double teams. And I think he can give you some snaps there. I think he's a nice offset of everything else that this team has. Cher can get it off the edge a little bit. So while the depth is not what it has been the past few seasons, I have seen flashes of these guys that I really, really like. Now, let's flip that over to Alabama, where everyone's going to tell you how highly they were recruited, how much talent they had, what they've done for the last 10 years, everybody that's been drafted, all the sacks and everything else. At Alabama, you're losing the best passer, the best speed rusher, the Nick Saban era, and Tim Williams. You're losing the best overall defensive lineman under Nick Saban and Jonathan Allen. One of the best edge guys in Ryan Anderson. And a guy in Dalvin Tomlinson, who I thought start to finish was the most underrated player in the SEC last year. You don't have those kind of dudes coming back. I don't care where they were recruited. I don't care how many stars are by their name, because it's not just talent. Those guys had the mental makeup to go out and wreck offensive game plans. Tim Williams could wreck a game plan by himself. Jonathan Allen could wreck a game plan by himself. Tomlinson was almost one of those guys last year, as was Anderson. You put them all together, and it literally was just an unstoppable crew with different type characters. I just don't think Alabama has those kind of guys. You know, do I think that Alabama has talent? Of course they do. And this is excluding Deron Payne, because Deron Payne is a dude similar to Dexter Lawrence, like we talked about earlier, that just nobody else really has. I mean, he gotcha. Can do things that nobody else can do. But I Deshaun Hand has never really wowed me. And all I get all day long is Isaiah Bugs, Isaiah Bugs, Isaiah Bugs. I saw him in the spring game getting double teamed, not 3 and 5 yards off the ball. But that's all I got to judge Isaiah Bugs by. I'm not judging a kid by a JUCO tape. That does nothing for me. I mean, I'm sorry. High school tape, if we're going to look at what someone could do as an incoming freshman, great. But I'm not going to look into the dude's JUCO tape and trying to relate that to coming in and playing against Florida State in the opener for Alabama. That doesn't make any sense. Anthony Jennings is the guy that's played a little bit. I kind of like what he does. And could Terrell Hall sort of be the next edge guy for Alabama? I mean, he's got the ability. But here's the difference with Bama this year. All those guys I just mentioned, Tim Williams last year, the year before, I saw him do it last year. I saw him do it 2 years ago. I saw Jonathan Allen doing it 4 years ago. And Tomlin has been doing it the last 2 years, and so has Ryan Anderson. I haven't seen these dudes do it in a game. And that's why I'm not as high on Alabama's D-line going into this season.
Okay, flipping on the other side of the ball with Florida. I got that. So I cover the Gators on the show. Flipping on the other side of the ball with Florida, I'm feeling pretty confident about my offensive line this year. I think we got better as the season went on. How you feel about Florida offensive line?
The most talented offensive line in the league, hands down. Now, Does that make him the best offensive line in the league? No, not right now. I am not near as confident as Martez going to tackle as I guess the rest of the nation is when they're tweeting me that he's going to be a top 10 pick. And we've seen him play tackle against what, South Carolina last year? I mean, I haven't seen enough of him consistently be a great tackle to think that he's just going to be a lock and be better than Jonah Williams and be better than Martinez Rankin in the SEC at left tackle. The kid's got every bit of ability to be able to step out there. I mean, he's every bit of some of the greats that I've seen in this league, like Marcus McNeil, Willie Anderson, Chris Samuels. I mean, he's got that kind of ability. But I got to see consistently him understand balance, him understand how to control his body to not get overextended, which is something that he did a lot of guard. His feet get stuck in the ground a lot. And that's something that's really going to hurt because he's going to be out on an island more now. So he's not going to have help from a center. He's not going to have help from a guy getting clogged up in traffic as much. So he's going to be in a lot more one-on-one than he has been the past few years. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. But you offset with the fact that you know he's got a boatload of talent. I thought Juwan Taylor, second to Jonah Williams, was the best right tackle in the SEC last fall. And I think if Jonah's going to left, then Juwan Taylor is my first team right tackle if we're talking all SEC offensive line. How he wasn't on any of the three preseason all SEC lines is an absolute embarrassment to everybody who was in Hoover, Alabama last week. Because the kid can absolutely play football. Mammoth frame, has a mean streak, and he's going to grow into that position a little bit more. Some of the technique and fundamental stuff that he struggled with at times last year, he's absolutely going to continue to grow and get better with that. And I think TJ McCoy would be my first team center. And Bradley Bolton
talk your great shit, football bro. At the end of get comfortable. Go ahead. Talk your shit, bro. Go ahead.
Bradley Bozeman played great football at the end of last year, and I like him a lot. I love his game. I am not enamored with Frank Ragnow at Arkansas like the rest of the media is. TJ McCoy, hands down, it's not even close, is the most physical center in the SEC. I haven't seen a dude come off the ball like he does, stay low with leverage, and actually drive defensive lineman off the point of attack from that position in a really long time.
Now, so, here we go. Now,
I love the kid.
How you see this playing out week one? Because I think right there in the trenches, that's what I'm anxious to see happen with TJ McCoy and my man Gary right there at defensive tackle with Michigan.
I think Hurst is going to be the bigger problem there because I think Maurice Hurst is an absolute animal. And he'll be down lined up more over TJ McCoy. I think Rashawn Gary is going to be out on the edge a little bit more this year. I think that because they don't have Taco Charlton and some of the other dudes out wide, they'll probably want to use his ability out there a little bit more. Okay. But Maurice Hurst and TJ, I did my five O-line D-line, top O-line D-line rankings matchups in week one. And that was number one, TJ McCoy and Maurice Hurst. Josh Sweat, Jonah Williams was up there. That's going to be a good one. I mean, there's going to be some – there's going to be some really good matchups in week one in college football, but that's definitely one of them right there. I mean, you go to South Carolina and you look at Zach Bailey going to right tackle, him against Bradley Chubb against NC State. That's going to be a fun one to watch. But, TJ McCoy, Maurice Hurst, I don't know which way to call it. It's going to be an absolute slugfest. I mean, that's going to be two dump trucks running into each other on every play. That's going to be badass to watch.
Gotcha. How you see the SEC East playing out this year, man? What's your prediction there?
I'm taking Florida. I think Florida has the second best coach in the league in McElwain. Loaded at tailback. Loaded at receiver. Mm-hmm. A good group of tight ends. I just mentioned the most talented offensive line in the league, and I think you bring in a new coach. I can tell you, going from Trickett to anybody is going to rejuvenate you mentally. But when you get a new offensive line coach, you know, a lot of times guys hit that reset button. And you'll notice this year, some of these young kids from Florida that have sort of been a letdown or haven't really lived up to the hype, all of a sudden you'll get one, two, three of those kids that are just like, they look like brand new dudes. Because sometimes you get off on the wrong start, you get off on the wrong page, and you need to sort of just reset things. And that'll happen for a couple of these kids. And the amount of talent that's there, that group is just not going to be a letdown. They're not. If they get any kind of quarterback play, then I think this team is going to be fantastic. The secondary is in good shape. We just went through the D-line. I like the first D-line. The depth is not where I would love it to be. And linebacker is probably my biggest concern on this team. You got a legit weapon at kicker, and I'm not going to waste our time talking about kickers. But, I mean, I think Florida and Auburn are two teams that, like, we legitimately have to talk about. Those dudes have game changers at kicker, and they're not cool, and they're not fun to talk about.
Now, ADP cool.
Think about it. No, it's kind of, but I mean, it's kind of corny to think about talking about kickers on a podcast, but the reality is those dudes are going to win some. They're going to win some football games. I mean, for both of those schools. So, other than quarterback and linebacker, this team's loaded, and I just don't think Georgia's there. They don't have any wow guys other than Trent Thompson on defense. The offensive line didn't play good ball last year. I don't know how much football means to Jacob Eason. I want him to prove to me that football means a lot to him. The running back is loaded, but they don't have the perimeter guys on defense. And I think Georgia's schedule is pretty brutal. I think it's more brutal than Florida's. So I like the Gators, and I got Georgia finishing second, Kentucky finishing third in the East.
Okay, no.
Interesting. Do you got Butch Jones getting fired this year then? Like, if Butch Jones finished fourth in the East.
Well, go back to last year, and I've had to try to explain this to Tennessee fans because they obviously – don't really they can't grasp the concept that they beat Florida but finished behind Florida in the standings last year. So
right,
it's
yeah,
not like
right.
I mean, they could easily beat Kentucky and finish. Here's the deal with Kentucky finishing third. Go look at their schedule. It is a tailor-made schedule in the SEC. They got a couple of lightweights early, and then they get into the meat of their schedule. They have a month and a half where they play one road game right in the middle of the schedule. The bye week's right towards the middle of the season. They draw both Mississippi schools from the West. Tennessee draws Alabama and LSU. So just from a scheduling perspective, I feel like Kentucky's going to be able to put a better record together than Tennessee is. So I think unless the wheels completely come off and Butch wins like three or four games, I think they give him another year.
All right, Cole. Well, man, you've been a really good guest. I think we could have you on for another hour. But I know you want to – we're going to save some of that. Yeah, he does. We're going to get you on and – maybe after the first week, come on and recap the Michigan Florida game and the Bama FSU game. Cole, real quick, tell people where they can find you on Twitter because you're a great follow.
At Cole Kubelik, C O L E C U B E L I C is the Twitter, and that's, you know, Instagram, Snapchat, everything else is exactly the same.
Okay, great. Now, before I let you go, though, we got to get a prediction from you on these games. Did I see it right? Did you already predict FSU to beat Bama?
Yeah, I did that in, like, March.
Explain
how you feel about that now?
After going back and watching the Florida State offensive line a little bit more, I don't feel great about it, to be honest with you. I still think Florida State has everything in place. And that's like we talked about it. If Bama's D line is not what everyone thinks they're going to be, Florida State might be able to get away with being average at the offensive line position. They got a good tight end to help out. I think they're going to be okay at running back. I just think Florida State's going to have to throw the ball 50, 55 times to win that game. And if Jimbo sees that early, I think he'll do it, and they can find a way to win.
So what's your prediction right now? If you had to give me a score prediction on FSU-Bama, what are you saying?
I'm not going to change it. I picked Florida State. I'll stick with Florida State. I picked Mississippi State to beat Alabama. But I got Bama winning the West and winning the SEC. So
right.
It's going to be a different year.
Okay. And now quickly just run through that Michigan-Florida game and what's your prediction there?
I like Florida. Michigan lost too much. And I understand Maurice Hurst and Rashawn Gary are fantastic. Mason Cole is one of my favorite offensive linemen to watch in all of college football. He's going to bump back out to tackle this year. But this is a game that speed and athleticism is going to make a huge difference. I think Mack and Nuss can keep the game plan somewhat simple. And they're physical enough up front to offset that D-line that we talked about. And I don't think the back end, second and third level of Michigan's defense run well enough. I mean, I can see a lot of quick throws that turn into 80, 70, 60-yard plays for Powell, Callaway, and Cleveland. I mean, I don't think Michigan can run with this team, and that'll be the difference.
Hey, do you have a Miami, Boston, Bethune-Cookman?
I'm going to go Hurricanes by 48 in that game.
All right, very nice. Thank you.
All right, Cole.
You've been a great guest, man. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for saying Miami was the best defensive line. Hey, so we didn't really talk – how is Miami – you like their defensive line, but you like the front seven even more, like with the three linebackers?
Oh, yeah. Those dudes are active, man. I mean, that's like – they're like such a throwback group. I mean, when I put the tape on, it literally is like watching the Miami teams that I grew up loving. I mean, those dudes just fly to the football. And here's the thing, like – I mean, Quarterman and McLeod, they're going to get themselves out of position on 4, 5, 10 plays a game. but they're going to make a couple huge plays doing that too, just the way they fly to the football. So they're fast, they're athletic, they're not afraid to take chances, and I love that front seven, man. Miami's front seven is going to be absolutely filthy this year.
All right, man.
Great.
Thank you
stuff.
For coming on, brother. Thank
appreciate you. Thanks, Cole.
Here you guys go. I'm going to leave you with this before we go. Before I let you guys go. I found my
list. You finna sing?
The top five O-line, D-line matchups, individual matchups of week one.
Okay.
TJ McCoy, Maurice Hurst, Florida, Michigan. Zach Bailey, Bradley Chubb, South Carolina, NC State. Bradley Bozeman, Derek Nnadi, Alabama, Florida State. Josh Sweat, Jonah Williams, Alabama, Florida State, because Jonah's going over left tackle. And then Mason Cole, Jabari Zuniga, Michigan, Florida, because Mason Cole's bumping back out the tackle. So there you go.
Love it.
Thank you.
So we'll have you on after week one to talk about these matchups, all right?
Look forward to it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right,
appreciate it, man.
Have a good night. Cole Kublik of the SEC Network and his own radio show. Cole was fantastic. I think we could have talked ball with him for like another hour.
So yeah, like, man, I was hanging up.
Yeah, like hanging ask up. Him any question, right? I'm asking.
Kev, you ended the interview and then said fuck it and just kept asking him questions.
Well, because I wanted to praise us more. Like, he already said we had the best team in the line, so I just wanted to, like, because we all know that we have the best linebacker corps. So if we already have the best defensive line. And the best linebacker core is like not even close. I just want
to. We don't know none of this shit, man. But I mean, you guys want to just talk shit? Then we can just talk shit. But we don't know none of this shit.
Well, just based off their what they've already done plus potential.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna break it all down with them. I hope we can get them back on after week one and talk about all those matchups, and then have them give us winners for all those.
Like how
I go on regularly. I fuck
how long was that interview? Like we said 15 minutes. I feel like it went off.
I think it went about 20, 25, 30 maybe. I don't know.
About 30.
You can't stop a good thing though, Kev.
It's a solid 30 though.
Yeah, it was a solid 30. Like,
yeah, you can't just – it's like trying to stop a piss midstream, man. You just can't cut it off. You just got to let it go all naturally.
I've never pissed for 30 minutes, but yeah, I guess, yeah, you're right.
I've never had to stop pissing ever before. So
yeah, like, I don't even know what he's talking about.
Oh.
The time he said you need to put toothpaste back in the tube or something.
Yeah, what are you
doing? Like, he's always on some weird shit.
Always. All right, so there was a question in our group chat today. We were talking about Justin Fields and his recruitment.
No. Okay, so I remember some big recruitments, right? Like, I remember, like, Cam Akers was a big recruitment. Like, it came down to, you know, whatever. Terrell Pryor was a big recruitment. Jameis Winston was a huge recruitment. Mm-hmm. Has Justin Fields, is this recruitment the biggest recruitment in the last, like, 10 years?
Well, I think it's bigger specifically, yes, I do. And I do think it's a bigger recruitment than Jameis Winston's. Now, listen, you got to separate me saying that Justin Fields' recruitment is bigger than Jameis Winston's to the fact that I'm not saying that he's a bigger
prospect. You're not saying he's better than Jameis Winston.
Right, but here's why I'm saying it's a bigger recruitment than Jameis Winston, because this time during Winston's recruitment, he was about to commit to Florida State. He made his decision in August. At this time, a lot of people thought he was going to Florida State, but people just couldn't get over the fact that he was going to leave Alabama, leave the state of Alabama to go to Florida State. So it was really a two-team race. Terrell Pryor, he was a name that you brought up. Massive recruitment. But it was really two teams. It was really
It went past Saturday.
But it was like, really Ohio
basketball. Like,
but it was really Ohio State and Michigan. The reason why I think Fields is a bigger recruitment is because there's four primary teams that are all within the same Southeast region. You have Florida, Florida State, Auburn, and Georgia. And then to top it off, as a four-team race, because And let's be honest, all four of these teams feel relatively optimistic that they're going to land him. So Fields ain't tipping nothing off. So all these teams are intrigued. All their fan bases are all in on this Fields recruit.
I mean, but even Bama and
as
USC
if that's not big
it.
Enough, Alabama yeah. jumps in. USC yeah. jumps in. Like
USC, USC's confident. They're like, oh, we had him on campus last week. And now it's the second time this summer.
Right. And most QB recruitments are long over by the end of summer. They're long over. Not only is his not long over, but there's legitimately four, five, maybe six teams involved right now. Like, I don't remember a QB recruitment, even Jacob Eason. Like, Jacob Eason had a crazy recruitment. You know, it was really Georgia and Florida. Washington thought they were in it a little bit, but I don't think anybody in the South.
Did Florida think they were in it until that last weekend?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he took an official visit there, you know? Eason took an official visit to UF late in the process, so they were absolutely in it. But again, you only had really two teams. Like, yeah, the hysteria was crazy over Justin Fields, but it was really only two teams. I mean, over Eason, but it was only two teams. Fields, you have at least four. So, and at this point, he hasn't even set a decision date. So let the speculation continue. The reports, the unnamed sources,
bro.
Like it's crazy.
I don't know if the interview is or nothing. I clocked out of it, bro. It's just exhausting.
He hasn't done any.
Like Barton said last week, this is the latest that the number one player in the country, according to 247, hasn't committed. Quarterback.
Yeah, so Justin Fields is supposed to end up at Alabama this weekend, which would throw a wrench in Florida's plans of him possibly coming down for Friday Night Lights. Silk, if Florida doesn't get a visit because he's just come off of visits to Auburn and Georgia, he's going to go to Alabama. He was just at USC. If Florida doesn't get a visit this weekend, do you think that signifies that maybe they're on the outs or they're trending down for him? Or is this just something where they'll get him on campus again later in the summer?
Yeah, I just think this is just going to get drawn out and he's going to be back on campus again later. But for now, I mean, they got a quarterback coming on campus, and they recruit him. And I say go after him. If he pop, you still recruit Fields.
You talking about Matt Corral, the five-star quarterback?
Correct.
Yeah. I kind of agree with you. I think you take the bird in the hand if you're Coach Mack. And I think taking Matt Corral alleviates a lot of pressure heading into the season, at least on the recruiting trail for Florida. You agree?
Absolutely. I mean, you just can't – I mean, it's a five-star quarterback, bro. Like, mm-hmm. I think his film looks dope. So I'm not going to take. Somebody's going to get burnt here, bro.
It's funny. It's funny that you said everybody... dope.
I don't know what that means.
Go ahead, Kev. We're waiting for the punchline, bud.
Nah, it's funny that you said his film looks dope when reports are that he got dropped by USC because he showed up at USC drunk and he's addicted to dope.
Like, easy. Allegedly, Kev.
I said reports.
We got enough lawsuits coming at the big three roll up, Kev.
Nobody reported that. I don't think nobody reported. I think those are rumors out there. I don't think that was reported. Nobody's gonna be that crazy reported about a kid.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, I think it's filmed.
They're not making it up. I made it up. I'm drunk.
It's a rumor.
I'm drunk. Matt Corral's drunk. We're all drunk. I got it. We all made it up.
But yeah, I think his film is dope, man. He's a five-star quarterback. If he wants to commit, you take him. You figure it out later. Yeah, you can still. I mean, other programs right now got quarterbacks committed. So if you still want to recruit Fields, good. But if he doesn't want to come, somebody's about to get burnt, bro. Like, regardless of what it says, somebody, he's only going to one school. Fields can't go to all these motherfuckers.
I agree.
So four or five schools are gonna be looking crazy.
So in March, April, May, it looked like Florida was leading for Fields. Are we backing off on that now?
I wouldn't say that.
I just explained that you keep recruiting them, but you're not going to just not take a five star if they want to commit. I never said that they're backing off of them. Of course they're not. They're in deep.
Were they leading for Fields?
No, he never came out and said that they were leading.
No, but did you think that, Berg? You always said that you had sources that said that. That's why you put in your crystal ball.
Again,
do you feel like they were leading for Fields at some point?
It doesn't really matter because the picture wasn't clear.
I'm asking you a question.
Kev, hold on. When I put my crystal ball in for Justin Fields, FSU hadn't even offered yet.
Do you feel like they were leading for Fields at some point?
There was only one team. There's nobody else.
That's a projection. Like it wasn't like.
Do you feel? No. I'm not asking. Were you projected or were you?
At one point, yes, I was confident that Justin Fields was going.
Corey, so do you think that Florida was in the lead for Justin Fields?
What lead? Like that sounds crazy. Nobody even knew if he was visiting. Nobody knew.
Yes or no, dog? Yes, you put it in after he visited.
No, it's no yes or no because it's a dumbass question. So no,
it's not a dumbass question. Did you think
they were leading? Lee, who? Who else was in it? Who else was in it in March?
Well, he was fucking committed to Penn State. So Penn State, I guess. Penn State, he was committed to Penn State.
So Penn State led. What the fuck are you talking about? So you're talking about teams recruiting them? Who else was recruiting them in March besides Florida? Lee, what? Yeah. Nobody. It was only rumors about Florida. So there's no leading. It was only one team recruiting them, bro. You're not making no sense. It was only rumors about Florida.
Okay, so Lee, when you was committed to Penn State.
Kev, but what are you trying to get at here? Yes, at one point we were pretty confident that he was going to Florida. So what are you trying to get at?
So how easy is it for someone to fucking out-recruit Mac? Yeah, a phone call? Like, hey, Justin Fields, we're interested in you too? And now five people are invited?
No, this is a terrible troll. You did.
I'm not trolling. I'm asking. I'm not trolling, I'm asking.
Nobody knows what this kid has been doing. You guys didn't know about the Florida secret business. Nobody know what this kid been doing.
I knew about him because you told me. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah, I didn't tell you shit.
Yeah, you did.
Well, I knew he fucking visited. When we were in Orlando, I know he visited there the day before.
Okay, everybody knew that visit.
Who the fuck else told me that?
Everybody know that visit. He did other visits. The thing is, you don't know if he visited Auburn when he was visiting Florida. That's what I'm saying. You don't know. Matt got a head start. You don't know that shit. That's why you sound retarded, because you don't know that Matt had a head start.
I'm not sounding retarded, dog.
Do you know if he visited Auburn during his time he was visiting Florida? Do you know that?
Well, no, but an Auburn
insider. Exactly. So let's move on. You don't know.
The Auburn insider. So Keith Niebuhr came on this show. Niebuhr came on this show and said he didn't know, to his knowledge.
He didn't know. That means he don't know. Shit.
Exactly. Well, what I'm saying is, all right, so when you when you put on the crystal ball to Florida, you have inside information that I don't have. So
I got only information I got when I put that crystal ball in. I don't give a fuck about the crystal ball. Y'all think I got some solid info? All I got is they was all in on Fields. I asked about the quarterback depth chart, why they're not taking Milton. They said we're all in on Fields. So I put a crystal ball in just for shits and giggles, bro.
It's just for shits and giggles. But if you hit one, then it's not for shits and giggles. Yep. That's what I don't understand,
Now you know how it works. Now you know how
it works. Now I don't understand, dog. It's just for if you're wrong, it's just for shits and giggles. But everything else is
You drunk. So I'm going to let you go, man. This is what you drunk. So you finished?
No, but go ahead.
You asked me. You asked me why I put in the crystal ball. I just told you.
It's for shits and giggles. You're just joking.
Why you think I put it in? Since you psychic. Why you think I put it in?
Because you heard that Mac led.
What? He was committed to Penn State. You got it right, dog. What are we talking about next? This shit.
All right, but whatever you want to say, it's piss poor radio, bro.
So if you put in Dunlap the day he commits, then you had insider information. But if you put in Fields, then you.
Well, I was told shits and giggles. I was told Dunlap is finna commit. What are you talking about? Of course.
Hold on.
How to have it in March and you had it today, but you got more inside info.
Hold on. Kev, you got to understand, you can put a crystal ball pick in as your projection, like as where you think he's going to project to, because
– No, it's absolute
– Hold on. Let me explain this, because if we're being honest, Justin Fields doesn't even know where he's going, so how are we going to know where he's going? Like, and especially back in March, like that's a projection.
So we're just projecting guys.
Don't talk logic, bro. That's troll.
So we're just projecting guys that are committed to other places with no insight, with nothing.
No, I'm saying we're it could be one. I'm saying it could be one or the other.
So Micah Parsons. I put one in on six. Micah Parsons.
Okay, hold on. I put one in on six. Why? Do I have solid information?
Yeah, Bird said he was your solid information.
What are you talking about?
Exactly.
On who?
On six. Sikowski. I just put one
you
in.
You said that you told bullshit. Him that Sikowski was going to Rutgers. Is that
No. That's just a projection.
exactly.
Based on some intel.
All right, let's
take some callers.
Never mind then.
I'm sick of being harassed by Kev.
No, this is bullshit.
Let's take some callers.
This is bullshit.
DJ.
So I put in fucking Fields to FSU before he goes to camp, and he shows up at camp, and I'm wrong, I guess wrong.
Who said you're wrong? Fields hasn't made it.
Corey on 100 fucking podcasts.
What?
I guess wrong. Oh, you were the first to guess wrong. Well, bitch, I put it in before he visited there.
Oh, we all know he's going to visit.
But you're not wrong. Yet. So you made
first,
a decision.
So you're the first to guess wrong in Florida?
You're bringing up
the first wrong in Florida?
All right. Like, hey, ladies. Can have a logical conversation. Ladies, chill out. We got a caller on the line. Big three roll up. Who is this? Where are you calling from? And thank God for interrupting Kev.
This is Peej. I don't know what y'all were just talking about.
Peej, wait. How was jail, bud?
It was a great experience.
How many days were you in jail for?
45.
Did they let you listen to Big Three Roll Up while you were in there? Because we had some really good shows.
Oh yeah. I listen. Nah, man.
No.
Nope.
Well, then good. You got some binge listening to go to.
No, but you've been listening since you've been out, though, Peej. Come on.
Yeah, I saw you. I've been listening.
Okay, good. So what's up, man?
What can we do
for you?
I want to make amends to Silk.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? I work a 12-step program. I need to make amends to Silk.
Silk, what say you?
I'm chilling, baby. I'm cooling. What's up? Ain't no pressure.
I just want to get on here and apologize.
Good.
You know, keep my side of the street clean.
I'm getting emotional right over here.
All you know what I mean? Likewise, yeah, man. Jail changed me.
Jail changed you? She changed me too.
Yeah.
No, you didn't have no fucking, you had no barbecues and Domino's and shit like Trent talks about.
It has an effect on you, dog. Nah, we all
people,
man. You got a big three question?
Yeah. Actually, to be honest with you, I really don't.
Did you come in? Did you go in a Florida State fan and leave a Miami fan?
I did not.
I don't know how Jerry changed you then.
Hey, Peej, what score you got for the Bama-Florida State game, man?
He already said this shit. It's just something ridiculous. He said he changed, though.
Yeah, but jail changed him, Kev. He's a more balanced human being
now.
Come
on, Kev.
Let's see if jail changed him.
I'm going to go, I think it's going to be relatively high scoring. I think that's going to be surprising, but I think it's going to be like 35.
Everyone says that now. Yeah. All right, so what's the score?
I'm going to say 35-31, and whoever wins the turnover battle gets 35. So I'm going to go for
FSU. You guys got Derwin James, dog. That motherfucker's a monster.
He's good.
Who's Sean Taylor?
Huh? I don't know who Sean Taylor is, man.
Oh, shit.
He was in jail too.
Sean Taylor?
All right, Peej. Well, hey, we appreciate you calling in. You're going to want to listen to this episode. We had some great guests on. It'll be on at Thursday at 7 a.m., all right? All right, bud. Thanks for calling in.
No pressure, Peej. I don't know.
I don't like that kind of Peej. I like when he's coming at your neck.
Sober and rational.
Right? He's way too balanced.
Never came at my neck, bro. Calm down. Pause. Never came at my neck. But he's usually cool on the podcast. We just had some run-ins on the time. I have run-ins with people, bro. That's what happens on Twitter, though.
Peej had like 8,000 followers at one point. Like, Peej is like Bob Marley on the fucking in his Abbey and shit. Like, Peej is like original Twitter's type shit.
I thought Kev was drunk as shit, bro.
Yeah, I wanted a Peej. An old Peej versus drunk Kev matchup. That would have been fun tonight.
I'm not drunk at all. I'm not drunk at all, though.
Yeah, you don't sound drunk at all.
I don't drink. I really don't drink.
Hey, we got more callers.
You don't drink any more or any less. Yo, we got another caller right now on the Big Three roll-up. Who's this? Where are you calling from, and what's your question?
Man, who is this? I got no caller ID on my phone.
The feds, bro.
What's up, brother?
This is the feds calling. We got him on the Big Three roll up this week. What's up?
Hey, man, I got a question for Silk, bro.
Who is this?
I got a question for Silk.
Real quick.
Oh, my bad. It's Vary from the 904.
Vary, I knew I heard a liar. Come on, baby. What's going on, baby?
We haven't had lies like this, bro, on our show for a while.
Like, we want to do no, more
man,
lies.
I got nothing but truth today. Nothing but truth.
How that's your boy?
Nah, but still, tell me, man, how you going to spend this one? I know you like Dunlap. Don't lie to me. And I know you know where he's from. So how are you going to spend this one when you try to, you know, kick back and say, oh, these Duval players ain't nothing. But here we go. We got Dunlap. That boy's a
baller. Now, real quick, you're talking about Curtis Dunlap, who committed to Florida on Tuesday. He's from Jacksonville originally.
Yes, sir. So,
and he plays for IMG Academy now. And Silk thinks that everybody from Jacksonville's trash. Is that what we're kind of going on?
Of course.
See, here's the rest.
Hold on. Spinster, go. Because nobody spins like Silk does.
I ain't going to bear Sanders with the mic. Yeah. Hey, this is how it works, man. You know how Tyree left Jacksonville to prosper? My man Dunlap took that same path, man. He prayed one night, and God told him, if you want to make it and be big in this game, you got to leave, man. You got to leave the 904.
He just hit you with the Barry Sanders, Vary. He just hit you with the Barry.
Yeah, I understand.
Hey, Dunlap ate like a dog.
How bad is my luck, though? How bad is my luck, though, that we got, you know, 2 4-star commits that are originally from Jacksonville and they take off for high school? This crazy in Silk, bro.
Silk can't claim him. It's Duval.
Hey, man. Hey, Dunlap took off at Elite 11, though, because I was a little iffy about him a little bit. I think he got some bad weight, but he showed he got some dog in him, so I'm fucking with
him. Nah, he's got some dog in him for sure, man. He does got some bad weight, though.
But now that he's committed, Vary.
We're on a good roll, though.
He's committed.
Well, let Kev hate. Go ahead, Kev.
That he's committed, like, do you want to keep an eye on that weight, or? He's trying to commit to a couple schools before.
Of course you want to keep an eye on the weight.
He's trying to commit to a couple schools before, and they wouldn't take it.
Hey, you know, that's just rumors, Kev, you know.
No, that's how he got to Elite 11. His shit, yeah, even I started hitting him up in the DMs at Elite 11, like, hey, is Florida going to take you or what? Because,
he was hitting him up in the DMs.
Yeah, I understand.
I think he's got talent to overcome that, though.
What do you say, Mark? I got lost. We're killing it. We don't have an elite offensive line class. I think we'll have like a top 2-3 O-line class, but we got to pick some shit up this weekend. We'll see what happens.
Hey, Vary, before I let you go, we had Sean King on, USF assistant coach, and he was on the podcast back in February. He follows us all on Twitter. He said that me and Silk are mean to Kev on Twitter. Do you agree with that? Do you think that we're mean to Kev? Nah, man.
Y'all are cool, bro. Hey, keep cracking on Kev, though. I encourage that, you know.
Emotional sometimes.
Yeah, he's just emotional. He's all right. He'll be okay.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate you calling in and supporting the podcast.
All right, man. Y'all have a good night.
All right, Vary, hold it down,
babe. Vary. He's close to becoming a friend of the show, wouldn't you guys say?
Yeah, he's trying to catch
He said something called Santaya Lewis was better than David Njoku. So, like, we really can't trust people like that. I don't even know what a Santaya Lewis is.
Vary lies a lot, bro. Once you know somebody, you got to put them in that space and keep them there, bro. Vary's going to give you some lies, dog.
Yeah, you just got to know what you're getting out of
him. Yeah. I don't even know who that player is, Kev's name, but.
We got another caller on the Big 3 roll-up. Who's this? Where are you calling from, and what's your question?
Steve from Detroit, a.k.a. Hurricane Steve.
Steve, you got D-mail phone?
You underwater?
Yeah, I'm underwater, man. What's up?
You sound better now. All right, so what was what's your Twitter handle?
At Hurricane Stiz, Steve from Detroit. What's up, y'all?
Oh, we got a hurricane on the phone, man. What's up? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. How you guys doing tonight?
Good. Kev's drunk as shit.
I'm not drunk.
Pretty good, man.
All right, man. What's your question?
I don't have a question so much as I have some comments. Living here in Michigan, I just want to say that there's a fan base that is more annoying than Florida State and Florida combined, and it's Michigan. They've never, ever been good. They haven't won a national championship since the players were black and white. is a
what are they now? Is it not black and white anymore?
Hey, why are you going out? Black and white. Hey, the why are you going out? White. Trident on the podcast, man. Trident's a friend of the show.
Yeah, Trident's a friend of the show.
He's probably nearby me somewhere, trying to hit me with a flaming spear or something.
So, do you think the state of Florida keeps the Michigan losing streak intact, and the Gators are going to beat Michigan in Week One?
I mean,
after losing,
I hope so. I hope to beat the brakes off of them.
Soon comes.
That's a Hurricanes fan that hopes that Florida beats Michigan. When the last time Michigan played Florida, they beat them by 70 or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. So we got Paradise Camp coming up.
Any of that meant.
We got Paradise Camp coming up this weekend. Do you think Miami, who are you looking forward to Miami landing? Do you think they get anybody big this weekend? What's the buzz?
No, I don't really follow. I don't really follow recruiting as close as you guys. I just don't want to see Mark Richt do a belly flop.
Well, what does he need to pull out?
Pause.
Double back.
Pause. Pull out anything.
All right,
think,
man.
Hey, Hurricane says, do you think Miami flips Patrick Joyner this weekend? Like, we know they're gonna flip him. Like, do you think it'll be this weekend or another weekend?
I mean, it's imminent, Jim, so it's got to be this weekend.
It's got to be a Paradise Camp.
Yeah, it's imminent that Joyner's going to flip. So, like, when is it going to be?
You put your crystal ball in, Kev?
This weekend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did that flip. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll revisit this next week. All right, man. Appreciate you calling in this show. Thank you.
Have a good one, y'all.
You too.
All right, hold it down, Steve.
Yo, we got a caller on the line. This is the Big Three Roll-Up. Where are you calling from? What's your question?
Yeah, man. What's good? My name is Malik. I'm from Charleston, West Virginia.
West Virginia. In the house. I don't think we've ever had a caller from West Virginia.
Y'all haven't. I've listened to every episode.
Hey, Malik, you black? You black, Malik?
Hell yeah. Hey, Silk, I follow you on Twitter, bro. I'm going to need to follow back. You playing on the lines, man.
I got you. Hey, man, I don't be knowing who I follow and don't follow and shit, man. But, hey, you in West Virginia, man. I was going to ask another brother from West Virginia because my man Randy Moss sound like he roll his ERs when he say niggas. So how you pronounce yours? Y'all rolling ERs like that, baby?
I say the GA, the GA one, man. But, you know, Randy, he from Rand, and Rand is probably like, it's probably like a 5 miles from Charleston, so he's like 10 minutes away. But it's like in the back roads type shit though.
That's
why he's like that.
It's like the acreage of Royal Palm, I feel like.
Yeah. So what question you got, bro?
All right, my question is, do you think we would be in better shape if we would have kept Will Grier? I mean, I know it's kind of like an easy question to see in hindsight, but I think he made a bad decision there, man.
I don't think it was up to Mac.
It wasn't his decision.
It wasn't up to Mac. I don't know why people get this confused, like Mac pushed him away or something like that, and that wasn't the case. He had to sit out a year. He was making demands. When it first happened, Mac went to bat for Grier from the beginning to the end of it. And so when it came down, when the NCAA said he had to be suspended a year, and he was going to have to sit out a year, that family wanted demands that when he came back, he was going to be the starter. And I think they put Mac in a bad spot. And he had to put his foot down. He wasn't going to play daddy ball, man. He just can't. It's his team. He can't be playing daddy ball.
So they wouldn't have promised that Grier would start over Treon and Mac
was
going to
gone.
Fucking.
Yeah, it was
that.
Del Rio.
Oh,
right?
Del Rio.
That
he would start over Appleby.
You just can't do it. It ain't nothing like that. You the coach. Like, no parent gonna come in your office. It's an ego thing, man. I don't give a fuck who you are. It's like somebody coming, you the head coach, somebody come in and say, I want to know that my son's gonna start when he gets back. You like, I can't promise you shit. Like, who's gonna make that promise? You can't do that. You the head coach.
Especially that high level ball. I feel that.
And he got, like, Grier had some baggage. Like, everybody acting like he didn't have baggage, bro. And he let his teammates down. The players on that team that season thought they could make a run, and I believe we could too, but he let the team down, bro. No, that's nobody's fault but Grier's fault. He fucked up.
So it wasn't cold medicine, like you guys said?
Who said it? The reporter said it. Fuck.
Oh, come on, dog. All right, never mind. Go ahead.
Nah, that was my only question. But
nobody ever said it was cold medicine. Like, Kev is retarded or some shit tonight, bro.
I'm a big fan of the show. I'm gonna let y'all know.
Man, say he took some shit off of the shelf. You talking about cold medicine?
I'm a Gator fan, but Kev's my favorite on the show though, because I know
he's your favorite.
I don't know what it is about Kev though.
Kev quit drinking, by the way. Kev told us he quit drinking. He don't drink anymore.
Why wouldn't I be your favorite, dog? If I'm not your favorite, like, you are in Rose remedial classes. Like, if I'm not your favorite, you're doing timeline math, like in college. Like, I feel
Silk,
you, dog. Yeah.
Silk, I've been looking at Gator Twitter. I've been, you know what I'm saying, I've been watching y'all for like a year now. Y'all need to start engaging me in the conversations, man. I got a lot of shit to say on the line.
No, I be in the abyss sometimes, bro. Like, shoot me your app, man. Cause DM me when we get off here, man. I know what app you is and shit, bro.
All right, for sure. I'm at y'all.
All right, man. Spread the word in West Virginia that we got a good thing going on this podcast.
I got y'all, man. Y'all already 5 stars on my shit.
All right, hold it down, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. For sure.
Speaking of,
so you just add that to a 5-star that I got because they don't even like y'all. Like, as a Gator fan, that doesn't even fuck with y'all.
Kev
wasn't a Gator fan.
Kev's making more money.
I think he's a Gator fan.
He was a Gator fan? What the fuck is he talking about Greer? No,
he said he was a Gator fan. He said he was. Yo, this is the big three roll up. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's your question?
Ben Stana from Birmingham, Alabama. And my question is, how the hell do you think Florida State can beat Alabama and Atlanta this year?
Well, sir, they can't.
First and foremost, they got to get better up front. We just had Cole Kublik on the show, and he broke down the offensive line, and I completely agree with him. DeAndre Francois took a beating last year, and
too many shots. Yeah,
way too many. But you know, he's young; he bounced back from that. But I don't think he can sustain a whole nother season of that. And it was a combination of him holding the ball a little bit too long, but also that line failed him many, many times. So I think it starts and stops up front for Florida State.
I think we got a shot, actually. I think the offensive line has definitely improved over the off season. They got reps throughout the season. They matured.
Hey, y'all get your ass whooped, man. Listen, man. I'm going to go ahead and break it to you and give you some cold-hearted shit. And y'all can get your ass whooped. Y'all just gotta figure out how y'all gonna bounce back and try to make the playoffs some shit. Alabama beat y'all ass, but y'all can beat y'all.
No, because look. USC finished number 3 in the country. They got beat 56-6, dog. y'all about to catch an ass over you've never seen before. And how the fuck are you in Birmingham, Alabama, and you don't see that shit, dog? I got a question for you.
I got a bunch of Alabama fans that are my friends, but it's going to start with the play-action pass game. We establish play-action. We make them think we're going to run
a
little
bit. Yeah, but who the fuck
is going
to fucking – you got to establish the run first.
Who the fuck is going to care about fucking
– I'm just saying, get the little play-action bootleg. Give Francois the option to run.
Okay, baby Jimbo, break it down.
No, let me ask you a question real quick. No, I'm trying to figure out what running back. Cam Akers, is that who they're afraid of, the play action?
Or I mean, you got Cam, Patrick? You got
running back.
Patrick, you got Rasul.
You do a hell of a job up front.
Kalen Mayborn was a 5-star.
The offensive line blocks. We give the quarterback the ability to run. That makes the secondary commit more of the QB and leave more receivers open for the deep pass. Washington did it last year in the playoff game, one of the first drives, and they stopped doing that. They tried to run the ball too much.
Well, and they lost 35-7, dog, in a bad game.
I love how Kev gets real hypocritical on us when he's drunk.
Because Kev doesn't think
the Gatorade All American, Army All American, 5-star, number 1 running back in America is going to have an impact. But he thinks 3-star Nintendo Perry is going to go into Tallahassee week 3. And make a big difference and win that and pull out a beat on the road.
No, he's a 4-star, but even Cook, how many weeks did it take for Cook to get over
fucking stupid,
he's got the same body style as Sean Taylor, fucking safety Carlos Williams. Like, Josh, you try to
That's the thing though. We're gonna try to
establish. No, hey, listen. Hey, hang up on him.
But all Cam Akers needs, I don't think Cam Akers gets more than 10, 12 carries in that game.
They said Carlos Williams was the next Sean Taylor. And he got carries over fucking. Hey, shut up!
Hey, bro, let me explain. Let me explain how we win the game.
Go ahead. Go ahead, baby Jimbo.
No.
Let baby Jimbo talk, Kev.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. This game's going to come down to the run, but not the running backs. Bama's going to come in, starting to try to run the ball, powerhouse it, or air it out. We established the quarterback run. We're going to make their secondary, which is their weakness.
You sound like Jimbo.
Start to focus more on the quarterback. When they start to focus more on the quarterback.
He says they're going
to
run it or air it out, dog.
Kev,
you
let
said
him.
Both things.
Let him go. Let him go, bro.
Has to commit to the quarterback running the ball.
Uh-huh.
The secondary is more prone to runs, and they're also more prone to passing because they don't know what's coming. You got three options instead of two. QB keeps it, running back keeps it, or the ball's being thrown. You got more versatility out in the field, and you can get the ball more places. Now, we got the best damn secondary in the country. I'm not going to lie. With Derwin James back, Jalen Hurts, that man cannot throw. Great runner. We stopped the QB run against Alabama. They're going to have a tough time scoring on them.
Now, that's easier said than done now. Florida State's shown that they've had a real hard time stopping running quarterbacks.
Yeah, maybe Jimbo. You say you got the best secondary. You say you got the best secondary in college football. I think Bama has the best wide receiver core in college football. Would you agree?
I'd say they're definitely up there. I'd have to look more into that, but they're probably top two.
You think your nickel could guard Ridley one on one or in a matchup? Your nickel corner, and that'd be a good idea.
Honestly, I think we're going to have to do man-to-man. We're going to have to pressure the quarterback, and we're going to have to make sure they don't let Bo run down our throats.
Hey, baby Jimbo, dog. Baby Jimbo, I just got you one question. Do you know the coach on the other side? Like, he knows everything you know. Like,
nah,
seriously, dog. You don't think Saban knows what you know?
Wait, what?
Never mind,
what team
dog.
Do you like? The guy who's saying dog. What team do you go for?
I like Miami.
Oh, no, y'all lost 9 years in a row. About to be 9 years in a row or eight. I don't know. Get out of here. You don't know football. Your team's irrelevant.
Talk your shit, baby Jimbo.
No, but here's the thing. Just because your
Jimbo's
team...
Jimbo's never lost to Miami. I think
you
know how to win games more than Miami.
So you think because your team won against my team that you know more about football than me, dog? You just said some baby shit that you don't think that Saban knows. Like, come on, man. Come on,
talk your shit, baby Jimbo. That nigga just talking, bro. Talk your shit, bro.
I mean,
go ahead, talk your shit.
All right, so hey, so hold on. So give me
y'all
your.
Y'all don't even have a stadium. Y'all don't even have a stadium. Why are you talking still?
Hey, listen, whoa. We're starting to bully Kev. We can't do that. We can't bully Kev. Silk's
no,
wife gets
but,
mad when
do
we when we bully
no,
Kev.
What do you mean? What do you mean? We don't have a stadium, so I can't talk. Like, come on, man.
We
go rate my
your own
fucking
stadium.
Hey, go rate my podcast that you listen to 5 stars on fucking iTunes.
He already did.
What are you doing, bro? What are you doing, bro? Relax,
All right, so listen, hey, caller, real quick, what's your prediction on Florida State's in season? Wins and losses, what do you got?
All right, I might be a little biased here. Don't
you might be.
Atlanta to Atlanta.
your baby Jimbo.
I think,
but go ahead.
I say, well, as of now, we're either going 14-1 or we're going 15-0, and we're in the national championship.
There you go. All right, man, appreciate you calling in. Thank you.
All right, baby Jimbo, hold it down, bro.
Whew. Kev's getting fired up. I think we should take this show another hour. See,
I'm not getting fired up, but how does he?
You're a little hostile.
You are a little hostile, Kev.
So he thinks that he knows shit that Saban doesn't know. Like Saban's not watching the same film as him.
He's just giving you his breakdown of the game, bro. He baby Jimbo. I think he stripped the first drive already in his mind. To be honest with you.
All right, whatever. I mean, I got a reason to fucking hate Saban.
Hey, we got a caller on the line. This is the Big Three Roll-Up. Where are you calling from, and what's your question?
I'm calling from Orlando, Florida. I'm representing the Gators, and I have, like, three questions I want to ask.
I don't know if you'll get all three in, but shoot. Go.
So, do you guys think that as a recruit, Matt Corral, does he live up to the – does he compare to Fields and Milton as a player? Or is he kind of like below them?
He's a consolation prize for sure. I mean, there's no question that Justin.
No, he's physically and more polished than Milton for sure.
I think he's more polished. He's got more definitely. Swag than Milton.
Yeah, I'd put him in between Milton and Fields. Yeah. But yeah,
he's better than every quarterback we passed on.
Yeah. All right.
I like Jaren Williams a lot, but I think Corral's better.
Thanks, Kev.
do you guys think that Zaire is going to live up to our expectations we're expecting at QB? Like,
I don't know what you I don't know what your expectations are of the backup quarterback on a 4-8 team, but yeah, he might.
The prestige and like we've had at QB in past years and just been real shitty as of recent. So,
let me ask you this, bro. Do you think he's a worse quarterback than Appleby or Dario?
No.
Okay, we got better at quarterback.
Were you one of the ones that says Appleby and Dario were better than Kaya?
Well, shit, they almost went the same round. Fuck out of here.
They almost went the same round. One's still in college and one thing in draft. So, did you think they were better than
I'm talking about Appleby. Appleby's not in college. What are you talking about?
He didn't get drafted.
Yeah, your quarterback barely got drafted.
But he's not on a team either. Like, come on, man.
What's your third question, caller? What's your third question?
My third question, Robinson, I think he has a lot of potential. And does he remind you of anyone on our team already? Or anyone in the past?
Now, wait. Who's that? James Robinson. James Robinson's not on the roster right now, is he?
No, he's not in yet. They got him listed on the roster, but he's not officially in. No.
He's not in yet. Does he remind us of anybody? Absolutely, he reminds
us. He reminds you of Willie Williams.
Right? No, I don't think so.
That's a terrible reach. Kevin probably got some more drug rumors or something.
Kev, you want to get a suit anymore on this one?
Guess what allegations you want to throw out here, bro? I think he's a physical. I don't think he can stretch the field. I think he's a physical post you up type receiver. I think him and Daquan is somewhat similar, but Green has better work ethics. I think they're similar. I think they're kind of the same guy. Neither one can stretch the field. I just think my man James Robson a little bit more physical with the ball in the air type shit. I don't know who he remind me of. No.
Good job with the three questions. You got them all in.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, dog. Hold it down. Go Gators, baby.
Go Gators.
He didn't sound too enthusiastic with that. Go Gators. All right, guys. I think I'm over callers, ready to wrap this show up. I got to cover camp all week, so we'll get back on next week and recap FNL, Paradise, Jimbo Fisher camp. We'll get on Andrew Ivins and we'll get on some people next week to talk more recruiting.
For sure. Let's do it, baby. I'm tired, man. Let me get to bed, man. Another big three roll-up, baby.
Yep. All right. I'm out.